Ben oni jetzt blind ist, ein Name nicht mehr so schwarz.
Brennenberg. Schwarz.
Cheers, Swartje. I appreciate the nomination, but I can't sit in this afternoon, unfortunately.
Okay, the nomination has been declined. Do we have another nomination? Honorable Nivo Dragon?
I nominate Honorable Richard Janke to be acting chair until the chair comes back. Thank you.
Is there a seconder?
Yes, sir, it's seconded.
Who's seconding?
It's Ngola.
Oh, okay. Mr. Janji, do you accept the nomination?
Nomination accepted. Thank you very much.
I see a further hand. Is there any further nomination? Looks like we only have one nomination. Mr. Janji, can you please proceed and lead the meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Ramano. Good morning, colleagues. Welcome to the meeting, all of you honorable members. Let me also welcome the minister, the deputy ministers, and your entire teams. I also can see that we're also joined by the inspecting judge. I want to welcome you and everybody else in the meeting. I hope OCJ is already joined. I've not seen them. We have received the apology of the chair who is not well. I hope that he has speedy recovery. Apologies for the fact that we're only starting the meeting 10, 12 minutes later. Just before I proceed, I see your hand, Honorable Swart.
No, thank you, Chair, and thank you for being acting Chair. And again, thanks for my nomination to Honorable Breitenbach. But I need to note an apology for this afternoon, as I will be attending the National Assembly sitting where I have to debate as well. So please note my apology for this afternoon. I will try to rejoin the meeting as well. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for that, Honorable Swart. Though the plan is for us to
recording
finish,
in progress.
Round half plus one, if I follow the agenda properly. But we note your apology. Honorable Nomathemba Maseko-Jele.
Good morning, Chair and members. Chairperson, I would like to tender my apology that maybe I'm still on sick leave, and if anything, I can't take it. Maybe the treasurer, you'll see me at appearing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jele. Please get well. Thank you, colleagues. At that point, I would like us to start and proceed with our meeting.
Excuse me, Chairperson.
Yes.
Is the secretary?
Hello.
I think that was the secretary.
The Chairperson.
Yes, Chair.
Can you hear me, Chairperson?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Is the Secretary General, Office of the Chief Justice. I was just noting that we are here in the meeting.
So you are in as Jacobs. Oh, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members.
Thank you.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, since you are wrapping up the apologies, Chair, wanted to also note we also received an apology from the Honorable Yakwa. She is flying to Cape Town. She will be joining after 10. And we also note the apology of Honorable Engelberg. Is also has issues with flights, won't be able to attend today's meeting.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for those apologies, Sia. Thank you, team. The minister has been ready 30 minutes before this meeting. I want to appreciate that, Minister, and I don't want us to delay you any further. I want to welcome you in this meeting. and ask you to take the platform and reflect on your overview as you would be doing a composite overview on your department and institution. Honorable Minister Ronald Lamola, I want to invite you.
Thank you very much, acting chairperson of the committee, and to all the honorable members of the portfolio committee, the Deputy Minister of Correctional Services, Inkosi Patekile Rolomisa, the Deputy Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, Mr. John Jeffrey, and we want to express our wish for a speedy recovery for the committee chair, the Director General of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, the Acting National Commissioner for Correctional Services, the National Director of Public Prosecutions, the Secretary General of the Office of the Chief Justice, the Head of the Special Investigating Unit, the Inspecting Judge for JICS, the CEO of the Legal Aid South Africa, and to all honorable members and the public at large. Honorable Chairperson, we meet at a time where the nation is still reeling from the devastating flood in KwaZulu-Natal and some parts of the Eastern Cape. We're also a society still recovering from the global COVID-19 pandemic, albeit with the minor resurgence. We can only hope that we'll still be able to manage the virus and the pandemic and be able to respond in regard to the economic challenges that comes with the pandemic. These acts of God have had the effect of derailing plans in a way which one could not have anticipated nor imagined. It is clear that we all have to be conscious and concerned about the effects and the imminent threat of climate change to humanity and society at large. We also have to ensure that our departments and these attended services are deeply embedded in our communities to ensure that services are still accessible in the most severe circumstances. Honorable members, the state continues to function and discharge its services to the nation. One can concede that within the arms of the state, of the executive, there have been challenges which have been laid bare before the judiciary and at times before institutions like parliament and other watchdog institutions. In a failed state, parliament is the rubber stamp of the executive and the judicial independence is judicially non-existent. This is contrary in our country. And this dispels the narrative that we are a failed state. The system of checks and balances still functions well in our country. One cannot also undermine or underestimate the role the fourth estate, the media, is playing, which has also contributed towards upholding the Constitution, the principles of accountability and transparency, and even when it was increasingly difficult to do so. The values enshrined in our Constitution continues to be a glue that holds us together as a nation. And these values are enshrined in Section 1 of the Constitution, and they are human dignity, the achievement of equality and advancement of human rights and freedoms, non-racialism and non-sexism, and the supremacy of the Constitution and the rule of law. During my last political overview, Honorable Acting Chairperson, I informed this August House about the celebration of the 25th of the anniversary of the Constitution. The Department of Justice and Constitutional Development will continue during this year with more events aimed at celebrating this milestone, which will culminate into a symposium on the 25th anniversary of the Constitution to be held during this financial year. As the Zondo Commission draws to a close, I wish to commend the Chief Justice for the stirring job he has done with the Commission. We are in full flight mode in the rebuilding process of the National Prosecuting Authority. We are as much as possible directing critical resources to the NPA to ensure that it has the human resource capital and the financial resources to respond to the many crimes which afflict our community, despite the challenging fiscal environment we find ourselves in. For instance, it is quite evident that our biggest challenge as a nation at the current moment is the supply of stable and reliable electricity and the provision of reliable passenger rail train. While the challenges at Eskom and PRASA are well documented, one of the most obvious factors is cable theft. One of the indicators we will be monitoring closely in the NPA's performance plan is that of cable theft convictions. This is an act of economic sabotage. Now more than ever, the masterminds of who benefit from plunging communities into darkness and train stoppages must be exposed, and the arm of the law must catch up with them. Furthermore, this new injection of resources must enable the NPA to combat organized crime, white-collar crime, and corruption. We know that it is not enough, but at least it is in the right direction to enable them to rebuild and to plan ahead. In the past year, there has been progress we can mention without any hesitation. The foundation of the investigative directorate was established by highly skilled Black woman and advocate Hamian Kronje, and the transition from her to another highly skilled Black woman and advocate Andrea Johnson has been seamless. And we want to thank, to use this opportunity in the House to thank Hamian Kronje for her service to the nation. And we wish her well in all her endeavors. And we also welcome advocate Andrea Johnson in this role, which is difficult and challenging, but we do believe she's equal to the task. The investigative directorate has declared 82 investigations and enrolled 20 cases with 65 accused. It has also prioritized 9 corruption matters for enrollment within the next 6 months. In their own ways, Advocate Shamila Badui and her deputy have said that we are nearing a moment of high-level prosecutions being executed without fear or favor. We shouldn't second-guess them. They are better placed than all of us to tell no lies and claim no easy victories. We do believe that they will be able to discharge their responsibilities as enshrined in the NPA Act. The Special Investigating Unit is also proving to be a significant agent in the fight against corruption and maladministration. As it also prepares to mark 25 years of its existence, there is objective proof that is a vital cog in our accountability and consequence management framework as government. Today, the SIU has enrolled cases worth billions of rand in the Special Tribunal and the High Courts. What now says is how we strengthen the cooperation between the SIU and other law enforcement agencies, such as the Directorate for Priority Crimes Investigation and the NPA, having learned lessons from the methodology adopted in the Fusion Center. Honorable members, over and above all this work and these plans, we're also mindful of the imminent and already released Zondo Commission reports. The Special Commercial Crimes Courts have been established in every province, and the one in Palm Ridge and Pretoria have been expanded to be able to cope with some of the matters that may emanate from these reports. Consultations are underway with internal stakeholders to ensure that the review of the South African anti-corruption architecture is a collective product. This review envisages an incremental approach with immediate action to short-term proposals, medium-term proposals, and long-term proposals that will enable us to continue to have institutions that will respond to the modern and complex crimes that the country and the entire globe is facing. We also have a team working on the implementation plan of the various findings of the Zondo Commission's recommendations, which falls within the scope of their work. This plan will be presented at an appropriate time to enable us to respond appropriately to the corruption challenges and recommendations that Zondo has laid bare to the nation. Responding to the corruption cancer, former President Mandela warned us about corruption when he delivered his State of the Nation address on the 5th of February 1999 by saying, and I quote, "Our hope for the future depends also on our resolution as a nation in dealing with the scourge of corruption. Success will require an acceptance that in many respects, we are a sick society." Close quote. Honorable Chairperson, I would like to commend this committee in a manner in which it processed the three gender-based violence bills which have since been assented to by the President of the Republic, President Cyril Ramaphosa. Once again, with their assistance, we are building the machinery to combat and address yet another pervasive and almost invisible pandemic in the form of gender-based violence. The three acts, namely the Criminal Matters Amendment Act of 2021, the Domestic Violence Amendment Act of 2021, the Criminal Law Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act 2021, cannot be elements which have no impact in our community. In this financial year, we will be implementing this act across the board, and we will need the support of our communities to ensure that the implementations of this act becomes a success in responding to the scourge of gender-based violence. We will be unveiling a program of action which is aimed on the various justice needs of communities across the country. And this month, we will launch our program of action as ministry, which will ensure that justice services are at the heart of our communities. Our program of action is called the Year of the Community, as we respond and implement President Ramaphosa's running call of no one must be left behind. Carolina and Mpumalanga and Delta in the Western Cape have been identified as communities which will start with this program during the month of May to assess the state of our justice services, improve the level of integration in the justice system, and assess the gender-based violence infrastructure with a specific focus on the new act and the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. Three bills will be introduced in this financial year, the Lower Court Bill and the Magistrate Court Bill, which will replace the current Magistrate Court Act 1944 and the Magistrate Act of 1993. The regulations of the Trust Bill will be introduced to replace the current Trust Property Controls Act of 1957. The Trust Control Bill is the latest action to ensure that we improve our anti-money laundering regime. Under the current regime, trusts are used or sometimes used to hide assets. As a result, law enforcement agencies struggle to obtain accurate information on who are the real beneficiaries of assets in trust. The Trust Property Control Bill will address this issue to ensure that our anti-money laundering legal dispensation is in line with the recommendations of the Financial Action Task Force and international best practice. The Transgay Penal Code and the Righteous Assemblies Act will also be repealed. The later act will be replaced with the proposed Criminal Matters Amendment Bill. These wide-ranging amendments will seek to update legislation to the new constitutional order. The COVID-19 pandemic and the ransomware attack on the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development IT system, although with devastating consequences, presented the department with an opportunity to fast-track the modernization of the justice services, as well as the overhaul of its IT infrastructure to make it fit for purpose. During this financial year, the department intends to implement phase two of the online services and maintenance protection orders, deceased estate, and the National Register on the Sexual Offences and commence with phase one of the State Attorney's Online Services. We are also in engagement with the Department of Public Works to deal with the current infrastructure challenges and also to look into the future in relation to delegating or devolving some of the powers that are with public works with regards to our infrastructure. This will enable us to deal with some of the minor challenges our courts and infrastructure face on a day-to-day basis. Honorable members, as you are aware, the judiciary has proposed a particular system of court administration informed by their own research. The executive has conducted its own research, and I intend during this financial year to approach cabinet on the executive's response to the judicial institutional model. The executive's response will also be part of the measures we intend to take towards implementing the recommendations of the National Planning Commission to accelerate reforms to implement a judicial-led independent court administration. In this financial year, the Office of the Chief Justice as a national department will be evaluated in the main on three strategic outcomes as set out in the department's 2022-2023 annual performance plan. And these are effective and efficient administrative support, improved court efficiency, and enhanced judicial performance. To achieve the above outcomes, the Office of the Chief Justice will expand and evaluate initiatives such as rolling out the court online solution to five superior courts. I am delighted to report that the development of the court online case management solution is complete. The final solution has been piloted in the Gauteng Division of the High Court, and the systematic rollout to all other superior courts will commence this financial year. The project has also been established as a centralized court online help desk to provide support to both internal stakeholders, judges and court officials, and external stakeholders, the legal practitioners. I'm informed that the leadership of the magistracy has expressed their intention to request the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to pursue a limited implementation of this solution in selected magistrate courts. Eventual implementation of this solution in the superior court and magistrate courts will ensure true integration of our electronic paperless court processes. The OCJ remains committed to its constitutional mandate of supporting the judiciary and government mandate as outlined in the National Development Plan and the revised medium-term strategic framework. In supporting the judiciary, the Office of the Chief Justice will continue to prioritize the capacitation of the South African Judicial Education Institute, SANJI. The department will continue implementing new ways to deliver training services to serving and aspirant judicial officers. Part of this will involve ensuring that the operational model of SANJI is adjusted to take advantage of available online platforms, and that SANJI's judicial educators and capacitated to operate under the new operational model. The impact of the budget cuts resulting from the prioritization of the national response to COVID-19 pandemic over the past 2 years continue to be felt to this day. As such, the Office of the Chief Justice has to be innovative and develop new ways to operate under these constraints, conditions, in order for us to keep the courts operational. To this end, the Office of the Chief Justice will continue to prioritize its budget and operations to ensure that the delivery of court services, namely support to courts, is not adversely affected. The Department of Correctional Services. When the devastating floods in KwaZulu-Natal wreaked havoc in communities, inmates through the Department of Correctional Services self-sufficiency and sustainable model contributed towards social relief efforts. Vegetables, eggs, meat, milk, bread, which were produced by inmates, were donated to the needy families, and this brought much needed relief to the communities. The donation demonstrated that inmates can contribute positively towards society when given an opportunity. While inmates are incarcerated, the department encourages them to adopt a positive outlook towards their life and to acquire skills. This enables them to contribute positively to social and economic lives of society upon their release. We are also pleased that the correctional services will implement a new program that will extend correctional and rehabilitation programs to remand detainees who spend more than 2 months in our care. Honorable Chairperson, through self-sufficiency, we have been able to take off items such as eggs and pork on our procurement list in the past financial year. and we will add more items in the list as we move forward. Most of our management areas produce enough vegetables and bread for inmate rations. We will vigorously implement this program so that we can continue saving millions for the fiscal, like we did in the last financial year. We are also encouraged that the National Treasury has approved 100% retention of revenue, which we generate through self-sufficiency. This is a major boost to the program as we will reinvest resources towards its growth. Our workshop have also been capacitated with the latest technology to enable them to produce inmate uniforms, staff uniforms and shoes in large quantities. Honorable members, we are happy that you recently conducted an oversight visit to the court and to the correctional centers. In your visit, you also went to Mangaung and Kudama Sentumule private correctional facilities. We manage contracts of public-private partnerships correctional facilities in line with the Correctional Services Act. These private facilities are contractually obliged to contribute towards the purpose of the correctional services system by maintaining and protecting just and peaceful society. The Department of Correctional Services has indicated that when this contract lapses, they will not be renewed. The department will take over the running of the facilities. There are already regulatory meetings to fulfill these objectives. We have also started with the inspection of facilities to ensure that they remain in good condition. We have met with the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure to look at how we can, through offender labor, respond to minor maintenance at courts and some of our facilities, like installation of ramps for people living with disabilities, cleaning and minor renovations. We will continue engaging our counterparts and pilot several projects to find innovative ways to deliver infrastructure, as this is our biggest challenge as this department. We are fully aware that our work in correctional services will ring hollow if we do not instill a culture of consequence management amongst correctional officials. On 12 April 2012, Mr. Stephen Maripuli Somo, who was stationed at the Johannesburg Correctional Facility, was sentenced to 5 years imprisonment by the Johannesburg Regional Court for aiding and escape. In the 2020-21 financial year, 94 correctional services officials were dismissed among those who were subjected to disciplinary action. DCS is intensifying its campaign and processes to systematically and comprehensively prevent corruption and mismanagement, as well as ensure consequence management. We hope to achieve this through tightening of management systems, increasing compliance with policies and controls, internal investigations and sanction, as well as referral to external law enforcement agencies where appropriate. Honorable members, as we conclude, we want to commit ourselves to work towards ensuring that all departments and entities under our ministry meet their objectives. We are continuing to engage with the National Treasury to achieve the JIC's autonomy and its independency as we engage with the other departments like the Department of Public Services. The National Treasury have a clear stand on this matter that they are of the view that we should not proceed with this engagement and with this process, but they remain open to persuasion. And that is what we are currently involved in, to persuade them in the view that we should comply with the Constitutional Court order on this matter. We will be focusing more on the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to ensure that we turn around this department and resolve its challenges, some of which we have inherited and are well known to this committee. No efforts will be spared. Effective consequence management will be implemented, and those who fail to do what they get paid for will face the consequences of their actions. Thank you very much, Honorable Acting Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Ronald Ozilamula, for that comprehensive overview you have shared with the meeting. It's really appreciated. Thank you for that. Honorable members, you have heard, listened to the minister delivering his overview. And perhaps at this point, I will invite all of you, those who would want to reflect on this in the form of questions, comments, or any contributions. You're also free to indicate that you're happy with everything so that we proceed. I recognize Honorable Horn, followed by Honorable Swart. Followed by Honorable Velma Nieuwe-Drachen, Honorable Gladys Breitenbach, in that order. Honorable Werner Horn.
Yeah, thank you, Acting Chair, and good morning from my side to colleagues and let me appreciate the presentation by the Minister, Acting Chair, and some, as this government is now calling it, green shoots, obviously, to be seen from the presentation. So let me at the outset welcome the undertaking by the Minister to finally make work of the court administration model. Something that unfortunately has been on ice for quite some time, but let me nonetheless therefore appreciate the undertaking of the minister that cabinet will this year finally make work of establishing a judicially led court administration model. Similarly, Acting Chair. The sentiments around public works is to be welcomed to an extent, in that it was quite clear, I believe, through our oversight visits that the current relationship with public works, specifically in respect of smaller maintenance matters, is not ideal. Having said that, however, Acting Chair, I do believe it's incumbent upon us to say to the Minister that it is quite clear that the underperformance of public works, which is an historical underperformance, but which in our view has accelerated over the last 2 to 3 years, is a looming danger for all of the departments, but specifically the Department of Justice, in respect of court infrastructure, a looming danger of a magnitude that we cannot overstress. And in that sense, the mere fact that the minister is engaging with public works around minor maintenance and the increase of that delegation and the possible use of sentenced inmates is quite simply not good enough, and I would want to hear from the minister whether he has any plans to engage public works on a more formal level around the absolute failure of public works over the last 2 to 3 years to embark on any meaningful and dire urgent a dire need for wholesale infrastructure maintenance at our court buildings, and secondly, what is his current understanding of the challenges faced by court buildings throughout the country, whether there is any process in place for the minister and his department to be aware of all of the challenges around court buildings. Acting Chair, then just a few other things. I looked back early morning at the minister's presentation at this point in our annual calendar last year. And unfortunately, I think on about 6 of the 10 criteria he last year identified, in respect of which the Department of Justice would ultimately have to prove significant improvement in performance, I do believe it ultimately is incumbent upon us to say to the minister that it's quite clear that on six of those 10, unfortunately, the targets have not been reached. The other four, I must immediately add, is more of an aspirational targets around constitutionalism and an understanding of South Africans about the rule of law and constitutionalism, which is, of course, difficult to ultimately measure. But the difficulty from our side is that if one looks towards the modernized and digitized justice service platforms, it's interesting to note that this year the minister is silent about the integrated justice system, because we all know the hack has sort of depleted or wiped out all gains in that regard. And we must therefore ask, what is the plans to ultimately, what is the status of this? What's the plan to ultimately revive this project, if at all? Around the master services, which was last year identified as a key component on which the Department of Justice would be measured, we unfortunately must say that it's quite clear that nothing much has happened over the last 12 months to improve the accessibility, the accountability, and the performance of our master's officers. And it is a worry that the minister did not feel it important to address that in his presentation to us. Regarding the reduction of crime and corruption through effective prosecution, we hear what the minister says, and it's if one has to say that words have meaning, then we must say it is very worrying that the minister today say this past year and the past years have been used to establish a firm foundation for the investigative director, and that we once again must now look towards the next 6 months for a moment of high-level prosecution. And from our side, we must say that simply is not good enough, but I'm sure my colleague, Glynis Breitenbach, will have much more to say on that score. Then, Acting Chair, and I'm mindful of time, I'm wrapping up. I would want to ask the minister, in the spirit of cooperation, to unpack his statement that some lessons have been learned from the fusion centre about possible better cooperation between the SIU, the AFU, and the NPA specifically. It is a very worrying thing listening to presentations from specifically the NPA, and one would want to hear whether more tangible proposals is on its way to Parliament in order to address that whole issue. And then finally, Chair, in terms of correctional services, mindful that our colleague in respect of correctional services is not here, I would want to ask the minister what the status now is of the integrated inmate management system, which he has not addressed in his presentation. If the IJS has been a money guzzler without any real fruits to show at the Department of Justice, then we all know the integrated inmate management system and the development thereof at the Department of Correctional Services is the same monster at correctional services. So I would want to hear from the minister what the current status is and what the plans going forward is in respect of HIMSS. Thank you, Acting Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Owen. Honorable Steve Swart,
thank you. Thank you, Acting Chair. Just let me know if you can't hear me clearly, then I'll turn off the camera. Thank you so much. But may I also firstly thank the minister for his political overview, dealing with a lot of issues, and of course admitting the financial constraints, admitting the constraints that his department has operated under, both justice and correctional services, particularly in view of the COVID-19 pandemic and of course the flooding. Can I just start then on dealing with the issue relating to the flooding and President Ramaphosa's statement, there will be no room for corruption in spending to repair flood damage. Now, we appreciate the steps that are being taken, but there is a lot of skepticism amongst the members of the public. I think President Ramaphosa referred to that as well. I would like the minister to highlight further issues. Yes, I particularly welcome what the president said about real-time audits, about other issues, strengthening financial controls. But I'd like the minister to advise us relating to improvements with the fusion center, referred to by my colleague, Mr. Horn, as well. The fusion center was very efficient in detecting and speedily prosecuting and recovering funds that were misappropriated. And so the attention that will be given to be monitoring, working together with the billions of rands that will be required both in the short term and the long term for the rebuilding following the devastating floods in KZN and parts of the Eastern Cape. Then linked to that, does the minister, and some of these issues we might raise later with the department as well, where he might feel necessary, but an important issue that is raised is the protection for whistleblowers. And is that envisaged legislation when the minister correctly referred to reviewing the whole issues relating to anti-corruption? There are two aspects there that are striking, and that is improved protection for whistleblowers, and I think that is referred to in the Zondo Commission report as well, and then also highlighting the legal obligation, I think it's in terms of Section 34 of the Prevention of Corrupt Activities Act, which places an obligation upon officials and any office bearer in the private sector to report any suspicious transactions over 100,000. I don't think there have been any prosecutions in that regard, but to highlight that aspect. Chairperson, thank you. Then moving across as well to what I welcome from the minister's perspective, and that is the reference to infrastructure theft, cable theft, Eskom and PRASA, and the attentions in that regard. And I would like to hear whether there is any proposed legislative amendments. Yes, we've got the legislation that we brought about in this sphere, but when it comes to, there has been speculation about scrap dealerships that seem to be the main recipient of a lot of the stolen infrastructure. Is there any anticipated legislative amendments that are going to be brought to amend these issues? I would like to also, Acting Chair, welcome the reference to the correctional services and the fact that inmates were contributed to social relief. That is very encouraging, and I think that message needs to be promoted more widely as well, the role that correctional services played in this regard, and they are to be commended that inmates also, from a humanitarian aspect, were able to contribute vegetables, milk, meat, etc. The focus on rehabilitation as well on remand detainees is an issue that is supported, and I would like to hear from the minister in this regard to what degree, again, if we don't cover all these issues, we will raise it later as well. I will raise it later. The issue relating to restorative justice programs that I've always supported and many in the department have also supported in that regard. Then, Chairperson, I would lastly like to ask the minister, and it could be that this could be addressed also at a later stage. I know the Deputy Minister also addressed this at a later stage, and that is we as a committee were unanimous when we accepted the issues relating to a proposed amendments to legislation dealing with persons that paid admission of guilt fines for trivial offences, mainly relating from the disaster management regulations, and now sit with criminal records. Whether there is any progress in re-looking at that consideration, those criminal records, given the fact that it has a very negative impact on those persons seeking employment, and many of those people would not realize that in paying admission of guilt fines for very trivial offences than I incur criminal records. Thank you for that, Acting Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Swart. Honourable Velma Nivo-Bruggen, it is your turn.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson. Thank you, and good day to everyone on the platform. Thank you, Minister, and thank you for your overview. I just wanted to bring up a few concerns. I will also ask the same questions to the various entities that will be coming before the committee when we discuss the APPs, but I would like to bring it to the attention of the Minister as well. Gender-based violence and femicide. I read with concern that there was a person who was accused of violence against a child as well as murdering that child. And this person is now in a correctional facility, the accused. But at the same time, the accused made a case against the victim's mother. This was here in the Western Cape. And I am just concerned that the victims and the families of the victims are really from the vulnerable sector. You know, maybe they don't have a better understanding of the justice system. But those who do or perpetrate gender-based violence and femicide are, you know, do sometimes have a better understanding of using the system against the victim and the victim's family. Now, I want to know from this sector, from the justice sector and from the minister, what assistance is especially given to victims who, you know, maybe, you know, they attack the perpetrator, but then they get charged for that. How can an inmate who is already charged also bring a charge against the victims or the victim's family? Because we see an increase of those kind of issues against vulnerable groups, and especially the victims of gender-based violence and femicide. That's the one thing. Secondly, we are now preparing, you know, evaluating the annual performance plan, and Legal Aid South Africa will come before us once again. And Legal Aid South Africa has had a lot of budget cuts. Yes, you know, but they will also be given an additional responsibility to look at the land issues. But with the budget cuts and all of that, I want to know from the minister, assistance will the ministry be able to give Legal Aid South Africa to also be able to run with the land issues? Then the SIU, they fall under the ministry, under the minister's portfolio. But I'm very concerned to read that the SIU head in the Western Cape is paid by the Western Cape government for his legal charges that gets paid, and the head of the SIU has fraud charges against him. I mean, it's the SIU, but the provincial government is paying for his legal costs. So now, what is the ministry and the SIU doing about that when it's a staff member of the SIU? It's his fraudulent case, you know, it's fraudulent charges against him, and this gets paid by the Western Cape government.
Just hold, Honorable Velma. Can these people be muted, please? They are disturbing the member who's on the platform. Thank you. Proceed, Honorable Velma. So my apologies for that.
Chair, I'm really finished. So those were just three things just with regard to the concerns I had. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Velma Nivo-Bruggen. Now I invite Honorable Glenys Breytenbach, and the last speaker will be Honorable Kola Nola. Honorable Breytenbach.
Thank you, Honorable Acting Chair.
and good morning to everybody. I'd like to, I was partially covered by Honorable Horn. I would certainly like a detailed explanation from the Minister about what it is the department plans to do with regards to the complete and utter failure of public works to perform at all with regards to any of the buildings that that they're responsible for, any of the matters that they fall within the areas of jurisdiction. What is the department going to do about this total, I struggle to find polite words, so I'll just call it a mess. We've got brand new courts erected in Limpopo and Mpumalanga that are about to be condemned as unfit for human habitation. Who paid for those courts? How were they signed off? Why are we sitting with such an enormous waste of money? Who is responsible for that, and what is this department going to do to ensure that those people are held accountable? It's completely untenable. Having just come back from some oversight visits, I think all the members of the committee are aware that prisons are in a terrible, terrible, terrible state. And the prisons are now funding initiatives with their own money, out of their own budget, very laudable initiatives, because public works just doesn't come to the party. And when we ask them about it, they wring their hands and look skyward and say, no money, no budget, no nothing, no never. It is a totally, totally dysfunctional relationship, and it cannot be allowed to continue. It is no good that we, year after year, have to see this destruction of...
Joined it was Steve Swart.
First of all, Honorable Breitenbach, Marlene Lombard. Marlene Lombard was disturbing the member on the platform. Please
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So really, I think the Minister needs to spend much more time telling us what it is the department is going to do to rectify this completely dysfunctional relationship that they have with public works. Public works must be held accountable, and I need to know how they're going to be doing that. Complete mess, totally useless, does not begin to cover what it is that we saw. The court recording equipment contract, again, and that refers also to the IFM issue. How does this happen? How do you know that you have a contract for a fixed period of time? And then, no surprise to anybody, at the end of the fixed period of time, the contract expires, and nothing is done to put something in place to deal with it. Nothing. What kind of a system does the Director General have where you start negotiating a new contract months, years, after the contract has expired, for any contract, but for something as vital as court recording equipment? If the court recording equipment doesn't work, the courts come to a standstill. South African courts, as the Minister says, are courts of record. It's no surprise. We all know that. No news. So we need the recording equipment. How is it possible that a contract of that magnitude, of that importance, was allowed to expire with nothing in its place? And it's no good saying COVID and adjudication committees, and it came as no surprise that the contract expired. It was due to expire. A year before the time, measures should have been taken. A year before the time, long before COVID, measures should have been taken to do something to ensure that there would be either something in its place or the contract would continue. This ex post facto negotiating of contract is unbelievably poor management. And I cannot imagine how a department the size of the Department of Justice doesn't have something in place that warns them about contracts that are about to expire, especially contracts of this magnitude. It's unacceptable. And I really do need a proper explanation for that. The IT systems of the department are in a sorry, shoddy state. it's really just, I'm at a loss for words. We have the Supreme Court of Appeal, and we're told that the justices of the Supreme Court of Appeal and their staff are required to use their own private data to get their jobs done because there's no connectivity in that court. Why is that? How are they supposed to function? How do we expect the justice system to keep working, to keep grinding out cases, to keep a quality system on the go? And they have no connectivity. It's 2022. Everything depends on connectivity. Now we have justices and staff members using their own private cell phones to get their job done because they have no other connectivity, let alone access to telephones. They don't even have telephones. So no landlines. They don't even have that. I mean, it is an unbelievably depressing mess, and it needs to be attended to, and I want the minister to please unpack how he's going to do all of these things. None of this can come as a surprise to him, and it's no good every year giving a general overview that does not dig deep into these issues, and we get this glossing over every year of tiny little gains made, and the big issues are just swept under the carpet. It cannot continue. It's not acceptable. For the minister, honestly, to come today and unfortunately the buck stops with him, so he has to take this beating whether it's he's doing or not, comes today and tells us that they've spent the last few years laying the foundation for the investigating director as well. To say that is gobsmackingly depressing doesn't begin to cover it. The investigative director should have hit the ground running. They should have had a building. They should have been staffed and up and running within months. It isn't a project that was going to last forever. It had a 5-year lifespan. 3 years to lay the groundwork. Well, I don't know what to say. I'm not often at a loss for words. I don't know what to say. We've been looking forward to, what on earth have they been doing if they've only been laying the groundwork? They were erected. They were brought into being to deal with high profile prosecutions, mostly emanating from state capture. Those cases are not new. Those cases are not new. We've known about them for years. The information about them has been available for years. Cases were laid. And I know that cases were laid because I laid some of them. Years ago. Am I being told now that there's only groundwork being laid? The groundwork should have been laid long ago. The investigative director should have collected all of those cases and got them court ready within not more than a year. And they should have been in court and being tried. And we should have already seen high profile convictions. And to say now we can look forward in the next 6 months to high-profile prosecutions, well, really? We've been looking forward to high-profile prosecutions in the next 6 months for the last 3 years. And frankly, it's difficult to gather any enthusiasm in order to look forward to anything right now. The tenure of that investigative director is almost over. And we've seen absolutely nothing. Nothing. We've heard a lot, but you see nothing. And frankly, South Africans and myself included are just a little tired of waiting. The integrated justice system, 20 years down the line, well, even more than 20 years now, nothing to show for it. Just excuses, continuous excuses. Every year there are more excuses. We see no progress. It, for all intents and purposes, doesn't exist. I'd like the minister to tell us today how many billions have been spent on this integrated justice system. With what we can show for it, would struggle to fill the bottom of a thimble. Laying the ground for Zonda. Well, now, really, again, gobsmackingly depressing. Zonda has been on the go for 5 years. The information about what is presented to Zonda was available 5 years before that, thanks to the investigative press. So 10 years down the line, we're now laying the groundwork for prosecutions about Zonda. Honestly, doesn't cut it. It just does not cut it. None of this is new. It wasn't discovered in the last 3 or 4 years. We've known about it for years. It should have been investigated for years. The investigation should have been finalized years ago. And the prosecution should have been in court or ready for prosecution years ago. So to tell us we've got to, in the next 6 months, we can look forward. Forgive me if I don't hold my breath. It's not the time for laying groundwork. It's just too little and too late. This should have been done years ago. I want the minister to tell us why it is that we should listen to, look forward to the next 6 months. Listen to laying the groundwork. Listen to next year, things will be better. That has been the story now for a very long time. Things are not better. The groundwork has not been laid. I don't for one moment think that anybody on this meeting should hold their breath waiting for high profile prosecutions in the next 6 months. And I'm very happy to eat my words publicly. If they happen, no one will be happier than myself if they do. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Gladys Breitenbach. Very colorful language. I will watch the space and remind you if there's any high profile. So let's just agree on that.
I'll be watching the space very carefully. You won't need to remind me.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Breitenbach. It will be an exciting moment. Honorable Minister, okay, Honorable Kolangola has wavered his time. I'm just going to check if you want me to ask your two deputies to come in, or should I just immediately hand over to you for your own reflections and feedback, having listened to the contributions?
Acting Chairperson, I think they can.
Okay.
And then
I'll come to you.
And also, with your indulgence, Chair, I think the two acting DG, the DG of Justice and the acting National Commissioner, could help on the question of infrastructure, because there are lots of engagements with public works, which I think they can share with the committee on this particular question in particular.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. DG Justice, can you come in?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the Honorable Members. The issue of DPW, you'll recall we raised it last time we appeared last year when we presented the APP and the general challenges that we are facing. We are making some progress. Maybe want to start with the general maintenance, which in terms of the financial delegations we had from DPW, we only had 100,000. We could only fix maintenance incidents to the amount of 100,000. We have now made progress, and in principle, it has been agreed that that amount has to be increased to about 1 million per incident. There are just some requirements that we need to finalize together with the DPW. And we think that once that is done, we'll be able to deal with a lot of the major challenges that we have across our infrastructure across the country. So we are finalizing those, including us having some, you know, technical capacity and skills in order to take care of some of those challenges. But in broad terms, you will have seen the past 3 years, we have not been doing well in terms of expenditure on the capital budget in relation to infrastructure due to public works challenges and internal constraints. And the last time that we have been advised through reports, progress was made with the building of infrastructure, new infrastructure and renovations, was when there was entities that were involved like IDT, albeit with all the challenges that were there. So we're having a discussion to look into that possibility as well of getting an entities with capacity that can assist and deal with this and address the infrastructure backlog that we have, both in terms of renovation, but also even in terms of general repairs. And we hope that once we can move, and that's what we are fighting hard to make sure that the next 6 months and in this year as well, we have an arrangement to allow us increase to through that facility of a third party entity to take care of the infrastructure. Because otherwise, the way it is, even if we come back next year without that, we'll be having that problem. But also, I think also, honorable members as well, maybe at some point, it will help, I don't know whether through a joint committee with the Public Works Committee as well, so that they can also express, you know, the challenges that they have and how they seek to assist us. Because currently, in terms of the GIAMA Act, they have all this responsibility, unless if they finally agree, which I think they will not necessarily be, you know, they appear to be reluctant, that generally they can give us the responsibility to manage the infrastructure. But with those proposals that we have made, we think we can make some progress in addressing those challenges. And thirdly as well, the appointment of facilities management for the new courts, including Plettenberg Bay, Mbombela, and Polokwane. That's the proposal that we have made, and they are open to it. So we hope to finalize that very soon, and next time we come back for quarterly updates, I think we should be able to update the committee and the honorable members. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DG Justice. Do I have the Acting Commissioner Correctional Services in the meeting? Anybody on his behalf?
Yeah. Good morning, Honorable Acting Chairperson and Honorable Members and Minister and Deputy Minister. I just wanted to provide a response on the issue of IMS in terms of where are we with its development. We have developed and tested the module for remand detainees, and we are continuing to roll it out to 42 correctional centers. On the contract itself, we are reviewing the work that has been done. We are also claiming penalties with regards to the work that has not been done so far. We are activating the system so that it can actually work in an integrated fashion with the legacy systems that have been there in correctional services. But apart from that, we are also addressing the issues that were raised by the Auditor General. We are looking closely into the contract itself. We are assessing it with a view to ensure that we continue to get value for money. That is the issue that I wanted to respond to, Honorable Chairperson. The DG for Justice and Constitutional Development has also touched on the issue of public works and infrastructure. As correctional services, we are working together also acting DG for the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure to integrate the work that is done by the IT and the Development Bank of South Africa to ensure that the skills that we have in DCS, in DPWI, and the two agents are integrated so that we can unblock the project pipeline and also ensure that we approach maintenance of correctional facilities in a dramatic manner instead of looking at each and every correctional facility as a standalone. With that approach, we hope that at least we'll be able to address the deficiencies that are there in the project implementation processes that are involved on infrastructure matters. Those are the two that I wanted to deal with, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Tabakhale. Honorable John Jeffrey.
Thanks. Thanks, Acting Chair, and good morning to everybody. I'll just deal with some of the points, I mean, particularly legislation. The issue of whistleblower protection, I mean, there was an amendment to the Protected Disclosures Act in the last term, which was put out for public comment, was processed by this committee. That's obviously the Whistleblowers Protection Act is basically about protection for people at the workplace. And I think the main issue for whistleblowers is their physical protection. So those are issues that are being looked at. I mean, obviously the final recommendations from the Zondo Commission are awaited before that can be finalized. Similarly with the scrap metal issue, there was also an amendment in the last administration on tightening up the legislation and the penalties for theft of metal, which also included the issue of dealing with scrap metal dealers and even the export of illegal scrap metal. So again, one can re-look at whether there are any further legislative amendments needed. But how much of it is, and it's maybe something that the committee may want to work with the SAPs on, how much of this is a problem of things not being implemented to the extent that they should be. Then the issue for Mr. Swart on the criminal records for admission of guilt fines, that will be in the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill. It's only one more Judicial Matters Amendment Bill that is coming, so I think it's gets delayed with new things being added into it. But that is still very much on the table, and that bill should be tabled by the middle of this year. On Ms. Honorable Nivo Drushin's point of this inmate, who's, I think it's awaiting trial, and he's laid a charge against the victim's mother. Look, one would need to get more information. Anyone can make a complaint, can lay a charge. It's whether that person, on the evaluation of that charge, whether anything is done about it. That's the key issue. So a person is entitled. Maybe 9 times out of 10, they've got no basis. They're just making it up. But maybe there will be the odd chance, the 1 time out of 10, where they have got a basis to lay a complaint. On the issue of the SIU, which was, I think, also Honorable Nivot Rishon's issue, I think Advocate Motibe is on the platform, but I think that the Government of the Western Cape has its own body, which they call the SIU, which is not in terms of the SIU Act. Maybe the problem was that the SIU name was not copyrighted, but I think it's an entirely different thing that you're speaking about. And then lastly, on the CRT machines contract, Honorable Breitenbach's point, look, the person that needs, that should respond, and maybe it would be better to do it on Friday, is the DG, as the accounting officer. But my understanding is, just as a preliminary response, is that it was advertised timeously before the contract expired. The problem was then the processes, or that process got overturned, and then I think it was re-advertised again, and similar problems. But so it's not as if it was the sort of left sitting waiting for the period to expire. However, I would agree with her that what has happened is really not acceptable at all. And there needs to be proper contract management, and there needs to be also consequence management for the people responsible. It's not something we can let stand. I think those were the main points that I thought I could respond to. Thanks, Acting Chair. Thanks, Minister.
Thank you, Honorable John Jeffrey. Honorable Patrick Leolomisa, Dilizindaba.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to the meeting. Well, the Minister and the Acting National Commissioner I think have stated what needs to be stated, unless there's something specific that honorable members would like me to address in respect to the minister's overview thus far. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you, Deputy Minister. Minister, before I come to you, I think Honorable Swart had made an important point that there is going to be more in-depth introspection and ventilating of the issues when we meet with the departments and institutions. And he was already holding back on some of those kind of details, so that today it's about those highlights. So he's made that point. I think it's a very important point, because we are going to have to raise these kind of detailed issues. As I ask you to comment, having listened to everybody else, we also are aware that today's session is kind of forward-looking. And then I think a lot of the questions were asking whether how you're going to do this and so on. Honorable Minister.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson, and to members of the committee for the questions and the comments, and also the responses that you have received. Maybe to start with is that on the infrastructure one, Chairperson, we have had the meetings with the public works at the level of the minister. And we were supposed to have another one somewhere last week. Unfortunately, it could not happen. But we are hoping that within the next 2 weeks, we will have a feedback meeting where some of the issues that both the acting national commissioner and the DG spoke about will be firmed up more concretely in terms of the devolution of some of these responsibilities and the powers from public works, and to look into what is it that also the Department of Justice may need to do in terms of capacitating itself, informed by its own budget, in terms of the engineers and the professionals that the department needs to be able to respond to some of those issues. And I must state that for now, the issue where the departments are struggling to find each other is the fact that with the devolution of the powers, must also come with a budget. So that is the teething point where we are hopeful that in the next meeting we'll be able to find a solution. For us, it should be clear that the devolution must be followed by a budget, because if it is not followed by a budget, it may not achieve its intended objective. And secondly, you will also know that with some of those powers, the Department of Public Works also has some of the human resources within themselves in terms of the capability. So those are some of the issues that are still holding those engagements. Hopefully, as we meet again, we'll be able to iron out and also see how do we deal with the issue of capacitation to be able to implement some of these initiatives. The point on the master's services, I think, Chair, is that obviously with the hacking system, it also affected some of their performance and services. But it is true that the queues and the long delays are not really acceptable for the public. Hence, there is a work to enable them in terms of the online platforms to fast track, and also the programs that will enable them to deal with the cutting of the queues in terms of the delivery. And I think as the department comes, you will be able to get the direct responses from the chief master in that regard. The issues of the what exactly are we doing with regards to the ID whether it was a foundation and what are the future plans. Indeed, the Chairperson, it's not like it has been slumberland for this period. There are cases that the ID has already taken to court, which are in the court's role as we speak. It's not like there was nothing that has happened. There are cases that these committee is aware of. The asbestos, the Stina, there are cases that are in the court's role. The issue is to ensure that the number of cases that are emanating or which have come out also from the Zondo Commission are also being attended. And that is the support that the ID is being given to be able to respond to that. But also the challenges that they face must be responded to in terms of the permanency of the ID, which we are in agreement that it should evolve into a permanent kind of a structure that will evolve into what we are looking into at the current stage as to what will be the end product of a corruption anti-corruption institution, also taking into consideration the recommendations of the Zondo Commissions and other inputs from other stakeholders. What institution must be the permanent and long sustainable institution that will evolve out of the ID? And the one of admission of guilty, I think the DM has responded to, the whistleblower has also responded into legislative arrangements, restorative programs. We still continue with the restorative programs. We held some in the last quarter of last year. But as the members are aware, because of the COVID-19, we were not able to do them in a manner that we would have wanted, but we are now resuscitating to be able to do some of them in their original kind of a format. And I think on the issues that relate to the victims, the DM has responded to the budget cuts to Legal Aid South Africa. Indeed, there has been massive budget cuts to Legal Aid South Africa, which affect their day-to-day operations. And we also share the concerns raised by the committee as we bring back the land rights management facility to Legal Aid, that it must be followed by a budget. And that discussion is, we have already had a discussion with the National Treasurer, which they have committed to ensure that that becomes the case, that this must be followed by a budget. There is a clear commitment from National Treasurer, which we have raised, and they are attending to look into the matter. The SIU head, I think the DM has responded. The IJS, we have introduced, the department has introduced the new governance framework, which is a three-tier structure, which is the IJS implementation committee, the IJS board, which is chaired by the DG. I've been informed that the board has had its first sitting, which will monitor all the implementation in terms of the IJS project and also the IJS ministerial committee, which I intend to convene very soon for all the ministers that are impacted by the IJS program. The new governance framework will bring stability and accountability in the programs, will also make all accounting officers to be also involved in the investment made in their department. It will also enable the achievements to accrue to the member department, that are accruing to the member departments, to be reported through the IJS program, because at this stage some of them are not really reported at that level. Some of those achievements include amongst things like the rollout of the the ELAA for Legal Aid South Africa and the Court Online, which is also part and parcel of the broader integrated system, and the rollout of the person verification services by the South African police services in the police stations, and the use of PIVA by SASSA to verify beneficiaries and to combat the fraud. So you will see that there is already work that has been done. It's just that it sits in various departments and not properly reported as the fruits of the outcomes of the IJS program. And it does not mean that there are no challenges. We still have challenges, including the automatic biometric information system project that is residing with Home Affairs, which we hope that as it moves and as it becomes implemented, it will make the life of the entire system easy. As I've said, that we will have to ensure that the governance committee of both the DGs and also of the ministers sees to ensure that there is implementation and monitors and evaluate the processes. When we have all of those, it will make it easy, because the DGs of the line function departments will ensure that there's accountability among their own information officers, the CIOs, and also ensure that the what is said to be done is indeed being implemented in those departments. On the one of the ID, I think I've already spoken. Chairperson, thank you. I hope all the questions have been covered.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, for your responses and for laying the ground today about what we must look forward to. And as Honorable Breitenbach and Honorable Horn would have indicated, we will be engaging with you and your department and all the institutions on the issues that you have covered in your overview. So thank you for that. Honorable members, in thanking the minister for the time he has spent with us, we are scheduled to meet the Office of the Chief Justice at 11. I think we could immediately go to that. Can take 5 minutes break so that they can get ready. They've been in the meeting with us, so we can come back at 10:42. Just take that 5 minutes break, and then we ask the SG of the Office of the Chief Justice to present. Thank you, Honorable Ozzy and your team.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. From the OCJ, who is going to present? We want to sort that out quickly. SG, are you going to be using your laptop, SG? SG, you're muted.
Sorry.
Seems to be more than one device that is on in your room.
My apologies, Chair. We are going to present. The head of strategy and planning will present, and the team will take the question from the honourable members as they arrive, and they will deal with also any aspects that arose from the ministers, from the questions of the ministers.
SG, it's the chair.
Overview. If that is okay with you, Chairperson, members?
SG, it's Sia. It's not the chair. We've taken a break. It's Sia, the committee secretary. We're just trying to sort out issues of technology. I don't think the SG can hear me.
Pia?
Yes, we can see the presentation. Thanks. Yeah, we can take it down until you are called upon. Thanks.
Thank you, Sia. Are we ready? Welcome back, honorable members, Secretary General of the Office of the Chief Justice. Please welcome to our meeting. Is now the opportunity for you to share with the Portfolio Committee and the honorable members.
I can't hear the chairperson. I can hear the chairperson.
You can't hear the chairperson. I can hear you. I can hear you.
The other one. This one.
Yes.
Can you
hear me now? Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, chairperson. Thank you.
Okay. You don't seem enthusiastic. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, chairperson. I can hear you loud and clear.
Thank you, SG. I want to invite you to take the podium and make your presentation. Welcome.
Thank you, chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. Myself and the team will present the annual performance plan 2022-2023 financial year, as already tabled, and the head of planning and strategy and reporting, Mr. Malawu, will lead the presentation, after which we shall take the questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Malawu, over to you.
Thank you, SG. Good morning, Acting Chairperson, Honorable Acting Chairperson, and all members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you for inviting us to share with the committee the OCJ 2022-23 Annual Performance Plan. Honorable Acting Chair, our presentation of the day is structured as follows. We've got, it's got three parts. Part A, the overview, which has the following focus areas, the purpose of the presentation, the introduction, and the consultation that was undertaken by the Office of the Chief Justice in developing this APP. And part B will focus on the situation analysis with a focus area on environmental scan that was conducted. And part C, which focus on measuring our performance, it will basically focus on the program performance information. As the chair and the honorable members of the committee may be aware that the OCJ has three programs. The first one is administration. The second one, program two, is superior court services. And program three is judicial education and support. So we'll be talking to the deliverables, the outcomes, and the indicators and targets in respect to all these three programs. And the other part that we'll be talking up, we'll be presenting will be the financial information and the updated risks. And that will be the end of our presentation. Honorable Chair, as already indicated, the purpose of this session is to present to the Portfolio Committee the OCJ Annual Performance Plan for the 2022-23 financial year. And in terms of introduction, Chair, the APP for the 2022-23 financial year is the third APP towards achieving the outcome and realizing the impact as outlined in the OCJ 2020-2025 strategic plan. When developing this APP, the following instruments were taken into consideration: the DPME revised framework for strategic plans and annual performance plan, the National Development Plan, which is the blueprint of government, and the revised medium-term strategic framework, as well as the overall priorities of the judiciary. In developing this plan, Chairperson, the following stakeholders were consulted in the process: the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, National Treasury, the Auditor General of South Africa, the Audit and Risk Committee of the OCJ, the OCJ Executive Committee, the OCJ Operations Committee, as well as the Ministry. Moving to Part B of our presentation, Chairperson, one of the key requirements or priorities of planning, Chairperson, requires that when we plan, we also take into consideration or into cognizance the environment in which we operate in. And to give effect to that, the OCJ has identified both the internal and external factors that has the potential to affect, you know, the successful implementation of its plans. And in terms of the external environment, the following factors were identified: the impact of the current status of the economy on access to justice, social factors and their influence on the justice system and court administration, technology and its role in improving access to justice, the legal factors impacting on judicial system and the administration of superior courts. In terms of internal factors or internal environment, the following were considered: the capacity of the OCJ, keeping opportunities for fraud and corruption, the health and wellness program, the ICT as a strategic business partner, the financial resources at our disposal was also one of the factors that were considered, business continuity management, and the status of institutions regarding the compliance with BBBEE Act, and lastly, the status of the institutions regarding women, youth, and people with disabilities. Honorable Acting Chair, I'm moving now to Part C, which basically focuses on the performance information with the direct focus. The first focus will be on administration, Program 1, which is administration. Program 1 facilitates through the following outcome: effective and efficient administrative support. And in order to realize this particular outcome, Chairperson, we've got a number of outputs which are key to achieving this particular outcome. The first one output indicates, the first output is clean audit outcome for the Office of the Chief Justice, and the output indicator thereof is audit outcome for the OCJ. And on over the MTF, the first year of the MTF, our plan is to ensure that clean audit outcome for the OCJ is achieved for the 2021-22 financial year. The same applies to the 2023-24 financial year. Our aim is to ensure that we have a clean audit outcome for the 2022-23 financial year, and the same applies to the last year of our MTF, which is the 2024-25, clean audit outcome for the 2023-24 financial year. The next output in realizing this the outcome is tenders awarded to suppliers with level 4 and above BBBEE status, and the output indicator is percentage of tenders awarded to suppliers with level 4 and above BBBEE status. And our aim is to ensure that over the MTEF, 80% of all tenders are awarded to suppliers with level 4 and above BBBEE status. The next one is output indicators. The next output indicator is financial disclosure submitted. My apologies, financial disclosure submitted, and the output indicator for that one is percentage of designated employees, which includes both SMS and other categories as prescribed by DPSA, who submitted financial disclosures within the time frame. And our target over the MTUF is to ensure that 100% of SMEs, including all this category of other employees, submit, you know, their financial disclosures within the required time frame. The next output in realizing the outcome on effective and efficient administrative support is funded vacant posts reduced, and the output indicator is percentage of vacant posts on the funded establishment. And over the MTEF, Chairperson, our aim is to ensure that we keep our vacancy rate at 10% or lower. Other output is empowered youth. The OCJ continue to ensure that it prioritizes the empowerment of youth. And, you know, the output indicator for this particular output is percentage of staff in the department comprised of youth. And our aim is to ensure that over the MTEF, we have 30% of our staff comprising of youth. The next output, Chairperson, is women representation at senior management services, which is SMS level. And the output indicator is percentage of women representation in senior management. And over the MTEF, our target is to ensure that 50% of women are represented at least at SMS level. So this means that over the 2022-23, the target will be 50% in the 2023-24, 50% as well in the 2024-25 financial year. The other output is people with disabilities representation, and the output indicator is percentage of people with disabilities representation in the department. And the target over the MTF is to ensure that we have 2% representation of people with disabilities within the department. Continuing with the outcome on effective and efficient administrative support, Chairperson, the other output is court online system implemented at service centers. And the output indicator for that particular output is number of service centers with court online system rolled out. And in the first year of our MTF, which is the 2022-23, our plan is to ensure that the court online system is rolled out in 5 service centers. And then in the 2023-24 financial year, we'll also roll out to additional 5. And then in the 2024-25, we'll ensure that we roll it out to 11 service centers. Our output is employee health and wellness programs. And the output indicator for that output is number of employee health and wellness programs implemented within the OCJ. And our plan is to ensure that over the MTF, we roll out every year 9 health and wellness programs within the OCJ. Our output is fraud cases investigated within prescribed timeframe. And the output indicator for that one is percentage of fraud of reported fraud cases investigated within 60 working days. And we'll ensure over the MTF that at least 75% of fraud cases are investigated within 60 working days. Next one is fraud prevention and anti-corruption awareness sessions. And the output indicator thereof is the number of fraud prevention and anti-corruption awareness sessions conducted. And then our plan is to ensure that over the MTF, for each year of the MTF, we'll conduct 25 fraud and anti-corruption awareness session across all the superior courts. Chairperson, slide 13, with your permission, I would like to skip because it's just a breakdown of you know, the annual targets into quarterly deliverables. The same applies to slide 14. So with your permission, Chairperson, allow me, because I've already indicated the annual targets, you know, for those particular indicators. Moving to slide 15 now, Chairperson. As much as, Chairperson, we recognize the strides that has been made by government in reducing the spread of COVID-19, we also acknowledge that as a country, we are not yet out of the woods. And as a result, management has resolved to retain the following set of indicators relating to COVID-19 as a measure to manage the risk pertaining to this pandemic. We have about 5 indicators that will be responding to COVID-19. The first one is number of COVID-19 OHS inspections conducted within the OCJ. And The annual target is 4, meaning that every quarter we will be conducting one inspection. And the second one is a number of COVID-19 awareness programs implemented within the OCJ, and the annual target as well is 4. And then our plan is to ensure that every quarter we conduct one awareness program within the OCJ. The third indicator in relation to COVID-19 is number of COVID-19 related trainings conducted for safety officers. And the annual target for the 2022-23 remains 4, meaning that we'll also conduct one training for safety officers across the OCJ headquarters. And the other one is number of COVID-19 compliance reports produced. And the target is 4 as well. And then our intention is to produce one COVID-19 compliance report every quarter. And the last one, Chairperson, is number of COVID-19 pandemic risk mitigation reports produced. We're also intending to produce 4 reports, meaning that there'll be a report in relation to COVID-19 pandemic risk every quarter. Moving now to program 2, which is our core business, Superior Court Services. The outcome for this particular program is improved court efficiency, and it also has a number of outputs. And the first output is default judgments finalized within 14 days. And the output indicator for this particular output is percentage of default judgments finalized by registrars within 14 days from date of receipt of application. And during the 2022-23 financial year, the target that has been set by the OCJ is to ensure that 74% of default judgments are finalized by registrars within 14 days from date of receipt. And then in the 2023-24 financial year, we'll increase by 2%, it will be 76%. And 2024-25 financial year will also increase by additional 2%, meaning that it will be 78%, the target will be 78%. The next output in realizing the outcome on improved court efficiency is bills of cost tax within 60 days. And the output indicator for that particular output is percentage of taxations of legal bills of cost finalized within 60 days from date of set down. And the target in the 2022-23 financial year is 80%. And then it will be incremental by 5% in the 2023-24, it will increase to 85%. And 2024-25 financial year, it will increase to 90%. The next output under program 2 is warrant of release delivered within 1 day. And the output indicator is percentage of warrant of release delivered within 1 day of the release issued. And the target over the MTF will be 100% for each year of the MTF. The next one is monitoring reports on law reporting projects, and the output indicator is number of monitoring reports on law reporting projects. Our plan is to ensure that we produce 4 reports over the MTF, so every year, every quarter, we'll be having a report to cover for all the quarters. The next output is judicial case flow management performance reports. And the output indicator is number of judicial case flow management reports produced. And over the MTF, we'll ensure that every year of the MTF will produce 4 reports. Next output is report on enhancement of court order integrity. And the output indicator is number of reports on enhancement of court order integrity produced. The plan for the 2022-23 is to produce 4 reports. Same applies to the 23-24 financial year as well as the 24-25 financial year. Chairperson, once again, the next slide, which is slide 19, is a breakdown of the annual targets into quarterly targets. With your permission, I would also like to skip this one and move straight to program 3, which is our last program, which is judicial education and support. And the outcome for this particular program is enhanced judicial performance, and is also driven by a number of outputs. The first output is judicial education courses. And the output indicator is number of judicial education courses conducted And the plan in the 2022-23 financial year is to conduct 110 education, judicial education courses. And in the 2023-24 financial year to conduct 115 and 24-25 to increase it to 120. The next output in realizing this the outcome on enhanced judicial performance is monographs on judicial education. And the output indicator for that one is number of research monographs on judicial education produced. And our plan is to produce 2 monographs each year of the MTES. The next one is monographs reports on the management of litigation, monitoring reports on the management of litigation. And the output indicator is number of monitoring reports on the management of litigation produced. And our intention is to produce 5 reports on each year of the MTES. Next output is reports on judicial appointments and complaints. And the output indicator is number of reports on judicial appointments and judicial complaints produced. And the intention is to produce 3 reports in the 2022-23, which is basically the 2 reports that are aligned to the sitting of the JSC as well as the annual report. And the same applies to the 2023-24, it will be 3 reports, and 24-25, 3 reports as well. And the last one under this particular program is reports on disclosures for judges' registrable interest. And the output indicator is number of reports on the status of disclosures for judges' registrable interest produced. And the plan is to produce 2 reports on each year of the MTEF. I'm going to skip the next slide, Chairperson, as it's also a breakdown of the annual targets into quarterly deliverables. And Chairperson, allow me to pause there and hand over to the CFO, who will take the committee through the financial information. Thank you.
Good morning, Acting Chairperson and Honourables. I'm going to take you through the slide dealing with the financial information for the MTEF period. The allocation of the budget for the next 3 years are as follows. In the administration program, Program 1, 255 million rand, growing to 271 million rand over the 3 years. Superior Court Services, 958 million, growing to 960 million in the 3rd year. Then Judicial Education and Support, 52 million, growing to 55 million in the next 3 years. Then in terms of the direct charges, judges' remuneration and gratuities, 1.122 billion in the 1st year, growing to 1.175 billion in the 3rd year. So in essence, the total budget of the OCJ is 2.388 billion in year 1, which then grows to 2.463 billion in year 3. When we break it down in terms of economic classification, the compensation of employees that is reflected on screen includes the salaries of judges as well as the voted funds for salaries of officials. So the total amount is 1.768 billion for both these categories. And then more specifically, the voted salary COE ceiling for the 1st year is 780 million of the 1.768 million. Goods and services grows from 371 million per annum up until 381 million for the last year. Transfers and subsidies, mainly where the judges' gratuities are paid from in the direct charge classification, is growing from 135 million to 142 million in the last year. And then purchase of capital assets, 112 million, moving to 120 million in the 3rd financial year. The main issue that we've been reporting consistently on the budget and the effect of budget cuts on the OCJ still remains on the issue of compensation of employees, but that has been consistently reporting as a problem for the OCJ. So that deals then with the presentation on finance. Thank you, Itumeleng.
Thank you, CFO. Chairperson, I'm going to move straight to the risks. The next slide will focus on the risks that are associated with the outcomes that we are pursuing as the department. It's already indicated our first outcome is effective and efficient administrative support. And there's a number of set of risks that has been identified in relation to that particular outcome. The first risk is possible exposure to fraud and corruption. And how do we intend mitigating that? Chairperson, we'll ensure that there's continuous awareness on policies. We'll strengthen internal controls relating to fraudulent court orders. And we'll also monitor the implementation of fraud prevention and anti-corruption strategy. The next risk identified in relation to this particular outcome is delays to implement the court online system due to external dependencies. And in terms of the mitigation, we intend to reinforce the stakeholder relation to ensure commitment pertaining to this project resourcing. The other risk that has been identified is possible cyber and information security incidents, which basically includes breaches and hacking. And in terms of mitigation, we intend to accelerate the implementation of the information security management programs. We'll also ensure that we conduct network and vulnerability audits, and also ensure an establishment of the threat and vulnerability management programs. Moving to the other risk in relation to the first outcome, the other one is inadequate resources to capacitate the OCJ in order to operate in the new normal. And the risk mitigation is to, we intend to reprioritize the availability of resources to implement the new way of doing business. And we also intend to implement and monitor compliance in relation to COVID-19 regulation. This will include, amongst others, deep cleaning and sanitation of the affected area at the court and national office after any confirmed cases have been identified or reported. Chairperson, I'm moving to the second outcome, the risk pertaining to the second outcome that we have, which is improved court efficiency, which is mainly linked to our core business, which is Superior Court Services. And the first risk in relation to that particular outcome is inadequate administrative support to ensure court efficiency. And the risk mitigation, we intend to mitigate this particular risk as follows. We'll prioritize the appointment of registrars, and we'll also ensure continuous training of the registrars. And the last outcome, which is enhanced judicial performance, which is linked to program three, the risk pertaining to that particular outcome is inadequate resources to conduct judicial education. And in terms of mitigation, we'll ensure that we continue to implement the visual and e-learning modules for judicial education as a way to mitigate, this particular risk. Chairperson, this brings us to the end of our presentation, and thank you for affording us the opportunity to share with, the committee our annual performance plan for the 2022-23 financial year. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, SG. Any final comments? You are muted, SG.
Can you hear me, Chairperson?
Yes, we hear you when you are not muted.
Oh, sorry. I was saying that the presentation for the 2022-23 APP has been given, and we will take questions from the members, including any other comments that we will make relating to the issues that arose in the minister's overview that touches on the OCJ.
Thank you, SG. Honorable members, I invite you to step on the podium and engage this APP of OCJ. Any points, questions, clarities, and contributions that you have, to the office. Honorable Breitenbach, followed by Honorable Wilma, Honorable Werner Horn.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and again, good morning to everybody. I'm going to start with my most recent concern. So, looking through the previous two years' report, the issues raised remain the same, which is somewhat of a problem, but I'll get to those. My most recent concern is the oversight visit to the Supreme Court of Appeal, which left, I think, the entire committee feeling deeply concerned, but also quite angry at how that court, which is a very important court in our judicial system, is being treated. So they have a number of infrastructure challenges, and so my question boils down to what is the relationship between the Office of the Chief Justice and the Department of Public Works with regards to infrastructure challenges being faced by the courts. Does the Office of the Chief Justice get involved in these issues and assist the courts? For instance, President Meyer explained to us that the roof of the appeal court has been leaking for some years now, quite badly, so badly that ceilings need to be replaced quite regularly. But nothing is done to fix that. What they do is they just fix the leaks, patch the leaks. So anyone who knows that water will find the weakest point and get through. And I see no sense whatsoever in spending large amounts of money patching the roof of a historic building that's constantly being damaged by rain, and not repairing the roof properly once and for all. Similarly, the air conditioning has been out of order since 2012. We're in 2022 now. Since 2012, the air conditioning has been either unusable or barely usable. It's not been replaced. It can't be repaired. So they send in a contractor, he repairs it for half a day, at great cost, many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands. It's repaired at great cost, but because the system is not being maintained for 10 years, it's completely useless. And so it breaks down again within hours, and that money is wasted. It's absolutely fruitless and a wasteful expenditure. It makes no sense. Spend that money on replacing the aircon system. The Supreme Court of Appeal is designed in such a fashion that none of the courtrooms have outside windows. So if there's no aircon, there's no air. And yet they spend money on patchworking a system that is so dilapidated that it cannot be repaired. They need new aircon. Are we seriously suggesting that our Supreme Court of Appeal must function without air conditioning in 2022? The electricity, they're on a load shedding schedule. The High Court is not on a load shedding schedule, and interestingly enough, neither is the Premier of the province on the load shedding schedule. They have lights 24/7, but the Supreme Court of Appeal gets load shed on a regular basis. It's ridiculous. Does the Office of the Chief Justice get involved in these issues, and do they help to address them? And if so, please tell me how. The Supreme Court of Appeal has no access for wheelchairs. It has one lift. The lift shaft is flooded with water. They're unable to find anybody who can pump it out or fix it. And so the lift just doesn't work. So if anybody needs to access a court in a wheelchair, they just can't, because there are just too many stairs. It's impossible. That's an unacceptable approach in 2022. Is the Office of the Chief Justice dealing with any of these issues? Then the Judiciary Court-led administration model. We've been told for some time now about the gains made and the progress made in this process. It would be nice to hear what the progress is to date and what the deadlines are for finalizing this process. Then President Meyer also raised an issue about equipment, particularly IT equipment. The judges get systems and computers forced upon them that cost vast amounts of money, but that they don't need. And that they could manage with much cheaper models, but when they suggest that, then they're told that they have to take those that they get, regardless of the fact that they don't need such expensive models and don't really want them. What is the issue there, and can that be addressed? Then court automation. You know, we have all these problems with the Department of Justice, who clearly cannot get their act together with regards to contract maintenance. And this has a serious knock-on effect to the courts, so much so that the courts just close and cannot dispense with justice at all. So South Africans who get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, catch 3 taxis to get to court, get sent home because the recording equipment isn't working. It's not acceptable. And they don't deserve to be treated in this session. And what is it that the Office of the Chief Justice can do in this regard? Are they involved in these negotiations? And if so, how are they involved? And are they making any progress? And if not, what can we do to facilitate that? We also, to my horror, discover that the system that keeps the automated court record is dilapidated and failing and in fact doesn't work. Again, that really in 2022 can't happen. And once again, it just points to a sadly inadequate system within the Department of Justice and perhaps in the Office of the Chief Justice of maintaining electronic databases of very important information. How is this being addressed? How does the Office of the Chief Justice approach this? And if they're having difficulty with it, is there some way that this committee can assist them to address that, what I view is a very important issue? I'm sure that my other colleagues will cover the many, many other issues that must be raised here, but I'll settle for that in the interim. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Breitenbach. Honourable Velma Nivo-Trichen.
Thank you, Chairperson. We're just waiting for the interpreter to get the headset on. Good morning to the Office of the Chief Justice and the SG and your team. Thank you for the presentation. I just have two questions. Honourable Breitenbach has covered me in relation to Department of Public Works. I would, however, just like to add to what she has just asked in relation to when was the last engagement between the Office of the Chief Justice and Department of Public Works. When was the last engagement to raise the concerns about the infrastructure, the aircon, and all of these challenges? Secondly, I see that you had a consultation with Department of Women, Youth, and People with Disabilities. I would like to know the outcomes. Well, actually, what was the consultation of, what was the purpose of the consultation, and what were the outcomes? Those are my two questions, Chair. Thank you.
Consultation with the Department of
Thank you, Chair. I also have a few questions in addition to what has already been asked, Chair. The first is in terms of the planned rollout of the court online system. At what is called five high courts, whether these have been identified, and if so, which are they, and what were the criteria used to identify the first five. Mm-hmm. Then regarding the risks, and as the department puts it, the risk of it being prevented to fully roll out due to external dependencies on CITA and Home Affairs, and then very worrying IJS. The question is really whether the Office of the Chief Justice is what is the status of their engagement with the role players in respect of IJS. We heard this morning that the latest response from the Ministry and the Department of Justice now is to say the problems with IJS will be arrested because there's a board in place now, which is, let me not unpack that statement. Let's for a moment assume that putting a board in place will assist us. Is the Office of the Chief Justice then represented on this board? And to what extent, let me ask it this way, how big in their assessment is the risk that these external dependencies would ultimately prevent a rollout at the five high courts in this year? Of course, also being mindful, acting chair of the following last year, toward the end of last year, it was prevented that the upgrade of the ICT ICT infrastructure, according to the presentation of the OCJ towards the end of last year, was stalled due to what was called the non-responsiveness of the market. So can we be assured that ultimately, despite those challenges in finding or identifying and awarding a contract to a preferred service provider, that basic upgrade of the ICT infrastructure in fact took place? And then in addition to that, ultimately looking towards Program 2 Superior Court Services, it is envisaged that more or less one in five of the people employed by the OCJ at this program will be shed come 2024-2025, with a number of staff being reduced from 2010 to 1,682. So the question around this is, how will the OCJ go about achieving this? Has there been an exercise undertaken to identify who will be those persons whose functions will be replaced by the online system? And if so, what is the current employment status of these people and their eligibility to be still employed by 2024-2025? Because ultimately, this is a very worrying thing in the sense that if it is somebody who's in a full-time permanent employment of the OCJ, then of course to just make these posts redundant will have a massive financial impact. And we are just mindful of the fact that of course budgetary allowance for salaries remain a constant issue, as has been identified again today by the CFO. Then Acting Chair, in terms of the case backlog plan, we were assured on numerous occasions during the course of last year that whilst the deputy minister was involved with coming up with a proper plan to address the case backlogs, that was first accelerated or compounded the issue by COVID and then by the court recording technology. But we were also informed that the OCJ would play a leading role and the judiciary. So if if we can be informed as to what has transpired to come up with that final case backlog plan. Then in terms of cybersecurity, previously the OCJ indicated that they would be dealing with firstly a learning exercise and investigation as to what caused the previous breaches. We see today that it is still identified as an ongoing and present risk. And I don't necessarily want, as we said previously, the let's say all of the final and full details around what is being done, but to say this, Acting Chair, it is a bit worrying if it is presented as a future exercise, that network vulnerability and audits and programs is to be established. But if one considers that the previous breaches happened as far back as 2020, and now we're in 2022, and from the presentation today, it would then seem that the risk remain as it previously was. So I would want to ask, without going into full details, as to whether at least some basic due diligence has unfolded since 2020 and the previous breaches to update cybersecurity and give a better protection. And then lastly, in terms of slide 27, also in terms of risks, there is one statement which I fail to properly understand just on the face of it, Acting Chair, and that is the statement that in the ranks of the OCJ, there's not the necessary skill set in order to operate in what is called the new normal. And I assume it refers to COVID-19. It is an astounding statement to make if we for a moment then assume that the COVID is here to stay, as many experts would say. I want to ask the OCJ, what have they then done since 2020 to bring that skill set into play? And if they have not done much, what is the plan going forward? Because ultimately we can't have this situation. And I think that's ultimately the practical aspect around this, Acting Chair, where public institutions just close for days on end for deep cleaning and this and that. I mean, surely we must now be past that. And this statement really worries me that in terms of the OCJ, we're still there. So if that can be unpacked a bit further, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Bernard Horn. The last, Honorable Steve Swart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I've been largely covered by my colleagues. I wanted to just touch on one or two other aspects relating to the SEA, and again, with the background of Honorable Breitenbach asked, what role does the OCJ play with this? Because many of these issues relate to public works, such as the issues relating to, in addition to what Honorable Breitenbach said, apparently there's a useless backup generator that doesn't help, that ties up with the issue relating to load shedding. And there was apparently a letter written to the OCJ by the SCA requesting that the SCA should be treated as a national key point. Is there any progress in this? Because clearly it's untenable that the Supreme Court of Appeal should be subject to load shedding and should have a backup generator that apparently does not work. Then can I also just refer that apparently there are problems with basics such as telephones? And can we just find out, because apparently the OCJ has not been able to assist in this regard. This is the feedback that we've had from the president of the SCA. Then I wanted to ask a more broader question about the budgeting process for the judiciary. We appreciate the fact that the OCJ plays a strong role in that regard, but I think it's a concern, and I'd like some clarity as to what role does the judiciary play in the broader budgeting process. Does the judiciary have any direct access to Treasury? I think when we were all in the Constitutional Court a few years ago, when the annual report was delivered by the Chief Justice, where he indicated that there was no input from the Chief Justice Sub, besides through the Office of the Chief Justice, relating to the budgeting process with Treasury. And we already picked up now, recently, with our visit to the SCA, where President Meyer indicated a lack of consultation with the judiciary on spending on equipment to be used by judicial officers, which they indicated was the purchase of expensive laptops, for example, that sometimes were not needed. So I'd like some clarity as to that process, which we as Parliament have a similar concern where we, in the budgeting process, just for Parliament, so where we sit as three separate legs in terms of the Constitution, that process, I'd like some clarity in that regard. Then there's been concerns about court orders in the past. I'd like some clarity as to what systems are in place to safeguard the integrity of court processes and court orders. I think that is an aspect that must be of great concern to all of us if there are issues related to leaking or fraudulent court orders. What has been done to enhance those processes? Clearly, from our perspective, we would be concerned about the budget cuts and the impact that will have on the Office of the Chief Justice. As indicated, these will have an impact on the operation of the superior courts in the country, the High Courts, the SCA, the Constitutional Court, particularly when it comes to vacancies. And it might be helpful if you were to highlight the very urgent issues. We appreciate the very urgent issues when it comes to that, and so that we have a full appreciation what the impact would be. Increasing backlogs at all the superior courts, local seat circuit courts, training programs would have to be scaled down. Some of these implications, so that at a later stage, we would have been alerted, because at the end of the day, Parliament is the one that approves the appropriation bill, the budget. Just on the court online system and case lines has been very effective. I want to commend OCJ and the Chief Justice for the process of case lines, but it needs to be rolled out broader to all superior courts. And I understand that was going to take place in this financial year. Could we get, is that still on course? My experience with case lines in, I think it's North and South Gauteng courts, it's very effective, and that would be very helpful. And we would like a time frame for the rolling out of these systems to, that's court online system and case lines, to the superior courts. Can I just then, I think, Chair, I've basically been covered in these aspects. I think the issue related to the financial constraints was, of course, the main concern. So thank you from my side.
Thank you, Honorable Swart, for those contributions. SG and your team, I now hand over to you to respond.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. We will take the responses, and we'll with your permission, Chairperson, put together the questions that are related, so that we can deal with that in a holistic manner. I just want to first maybe take out of the way the issues that falls within the area of the judiciary, which is mainly the case backlog, and let's start with the judiciary-led court administration. And I think members are aware that this is a question that we always get. And I think in the minister's overview, he has indicated that he will be giving attention to that. From our side as the administration,
quite frankly, this is a policy matter that requires the executive to engage with the views and the positions adopted by the judiciary in their institutional models report that was submitted to the executive some years ago, as already indicated. And therefore, from our side, we will play only a role of an input with regard to the policy as and when the minister begins to engage with that process. And I think that the minister also will be engaged with cabinet on that. So the response in a nutshell is that as the OCJ administration, we will be guided by the ministry and executive with regards to what their response and what the position is with regards to the judiciary-led court administration, and therefore we cannot on our own initiate any progress in that regard. On case backlogs plan, we are aware of what was said in the past regarding the case backlog and the measures that were put in place, but as you will recall, committee members, this matter falls squarely within the role of the Chief Justice and the heads of court in the judicial space, which they deal with when they present their report every year, the judiciary annual report, and they deal with this matter in that sense. I am not aware that at any stage the OCJ being the administration will be leading, but I think it is the judiciary that leads on this part, just for the sake of clarity on that one. I wanted to deal also with the issue in general. The CFO will deal with the budgeting aspects. But just to indicate that how the court online will impact the staff in the courts and how the permanent jobs will be, I think it's one of the questions that was raised by one of the members. The risk of permanent jobs being rendered redundant because of the automation, or especially the court online, etc. Just to say that members, we have always operated in the administration with constraints with regards to the number of staff that are required to effectively serve the courts. In all the courts, starting with the biggest, which is routing through to the smallest. Of course, the challenges will differ from court to court, but the limitations remain the same, that we have never had an instance where we had sufficient number of officials to do the work relating especially to the core, which is the court processes. So therefore, we have always operated on a deficit when it comes to skills as well as the competencies and the human and bodies to do the work. So against that background, therefore, when automation comes, the natural process will be that obviously those areas that we haven't been able to do, if it frees up the hands of the employees who are there, will be looked at as in that context. But it does not necessarily mean that any job is going to be rendered. I do not foresee that eventuality ever happening in the courts myself, and I can speak on authority on that. But also the other aspect is that there is a natural attrition. Natural attrition being those people who have been in the system for a long time are now retiring in the courts. Those are mostly in the area of the core business of the court in court processes. So the replacement thereof also becomes an issue with regard to the budget cuts that the CFO has already alluded to. And obviously, as you're listening to me, probably you're asking what is the response, what is the department doing about it? Myself and the CFO, we engage with the HR on this matter to constantly look at how the COE budget impact is on the staff and the staffing of the and the human capacity of the organization. And in doing so, we make sure that as attrition happens, as we lose some of the people who have been long and skilled in the institutional court processes, how we prioritize that we do on a regular basis. So I can assure you that it is something that we are really doing on a continuous basis. And therefore, there is no risk of permanent jobs getting redundant. People will just be reskilled into other areas and be able to do that, which we do on a continuous basis. I just want to address on the SCA, not necessarily in all the details, with regard to the issues that are raised by the committee relating to the president of the SCA. I must say for myself and the team, we are not aware of any instances where we went and procured any expensive computers or laptops of any gadgets for the judges without any consultation or spending money that is not necessarily supposed to be spent on those items. When COVID hits the court, as it hit the country and any other place of the world, the computers and the gadgets that we had as ICT tools were not geared up, were not ready for having to do work virtually. And therefore, it means if the computer that a specific judge would have is not compatible to be able to go virtual, naturally, we have to go and procure that. The laptops and the computers that will be able to assist the court to function virtually as it was the case in the last 2 years. So that was what was happening. And this I am not aware, and I can stand on that there is no official who will go and buy any computer for any judge and just knock on the door and arrive and present it without having explained. We do that because we do have a committee of judges that also looks at ICT. There's a lot of governance that is in place in relation to how we consult with judges on this matter. And all the courts are involved and all the courts are engaged. I am not trying to say that we are a perfect staff who will do everything right. Of course, if mistakes are made, they can be made. But I can vouch that we've never bought anybody a computer that it does not need. But also on the issue of reimbursement, there was an issue raised around the judges having to buy for themselves the data because we are not able to. There was an instance recently that CETA was off. And when CETA is off, we switch to Vodacom. That is the backup that we have. And we also have Mimecast as a backup when our system reaches some of these glitches that some of them we don't have control over. The OCJ is not in control of CETA, and therefore when CETA is affected, it's not only I think the OCJ that's affected, the entire government that is linked there is affected. So, and I can understand the frustration from the judges when they don't understand that it is not necessarily us who are cutting them off. But as I've said, we go to Vodacom and then we go to Mimecast to make sure that we have the backup for the judges, I mean, for the courts and the judges and the staff to be able to operate. I just wanted to raise those issues at a high level and just indicate that we are not necessarily oblivious to that. When the judges work at home, as COVID hit historically, the reimbursement process kicked in, and to make sure that judges, they function, they are paid for the data that they incur. It is not only judges, even officials that are linked to support the judges, we do that for them. So it is policy, it is in place, that's what we have done. I just wanted to get that one out of the way. Maybe let me pause here, Honorable Chairperson and members, and let the CFO deal with the financial aspect, if there's anything he needs to add, as well as Mr. Nubia will deal with the court online aspect. Thank you.
Thank you, SG. Honorable Chairperson, I'm going to deal with the infrastructure challenges that were raised, some of the questions, and then on the budget.
Let's start with the budget, because then we'll come back.
Hello, your network is very unstable. We cannot hear you. Please reposition yourself.
Can you hear me now, Chairperson?
Chairperson, can you hear?
It seems.
Hello, Chairperson. We can hear. Oh, my God.
We can hear, quite possibly it's the acting chair that's having a challenge.
Okay. Should we then proceed or wait for the acting chair?
Acting chairperson, can you hear us? I don't know if other members of the committee can hear us.
We can hear you very well, but it would be pointless to continue without the chair or the acting chair, so
Let's just give him a...
Okay, members, let me just check with the chair quickly. We'll come back. I think he has network problems.
Hello.
I don't see. Chairperson, can you hear us?
It was me who had a challenge.
Can you hear us, Chairperson? Can we proceed, Chairperson?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, thank you. I had just paused when I said the CFO will deal with the finances. I think
yes, I can hear.
Yes. Just one comment before the CFO deals with finance and some of the infrastructure issues. Just to remind the committee that we still have the facilities management and facility and security management functions retained by the DOJ. So our engagement is obviously via the DOJ to DPW. And that is not an excuse, but at official level, when we do engage with the officials in DPW as and when the matters arise. And I will leave it at that. I wanted to remind the committee that we don't have that control of that function, though we are not trying to shy away from responsibility. CFO, over to you.
Thank you, SG, and Honourable Chairperson. On the issue, the questions raised on the budget. Firstly, in terms of because the OCJ is a national department, we are guided and bound by the PFMA in terms of the budget processes and principles. Over and above the PFMA, Section 54 of the Superior Courts Act also prescribes the process of the engagement by the judiciary with the Minister of Justice at the time of budget submission. So in practice, the heads of court are engaged in terms of their budget needs and submissions by the provincial heads, which is then combined in a consolidated budget to the OCJ National Office, which is then submitted to the Minister of to the Budget Committee in National Treasury and the Minister of Justice. So to answer the question, because we are functioning as a national department, there is no direct interaction between the judiciary and National Treasury when the judiciary as an arm of state's needs are or should be addressed. And that is basically the only way that the budget is being dealt with, through engagement with the heads of court, their needs and priorities are submitted, but then it is treated similar to any submission by any national department in the budgetary process. Then on the issue of infrastructure challenges, the SG has already now raised the issue of the retention of the function in the Department of Justice, which then forces the OCJ to directly engage with the Department of Justice and escalate our matters to DPW through that process. However, but that is in the judicial space, and I don't want to go too much into that part. There is an infrastructure committee that was established by the heads of court, which is led by one of the heads of court, and there are engagements with public works at that level, where issues that are then raised with the Department of Public Works are noted and then given to us in the OCJ as officials, and we then at provincial level as well as national level engage with the colleagues in Public Works and the Department of Justice to make them aware of the critical infrastructure matters that comes from the judiciary in terms of the court. The one issue that we do not, however, have control over
is if an issue is raised with them, what the responses are going to be, what the budget is going to be that's allocated, because that falls with outside of the space and the mandate of the OCJ. On the specific challenges at the Supreme Court of Appeal, I do know that the issues that were raised in terms of generator, roof leaks, air conditioning is on the list that is being dealt with by the colleagues in the province, as well as has been escalated to the national level of public works as well. So the OCJ is aware of that, and in those engagements, these matters are attended to. Maybe just to add on to the issue of the computer equipment that the SG raised, I think it's also important that the committee members must note that departments do not procure ICT equipment in isolation. There is a transversal contract or transversal contracts that are issued by CITA for each and every type of equipment, whether it's a desktop or a laptop, with certain specifications that we need to use those contracts with those specifications when we procure. The only thing that we do is we assess whether the computers that are the specifications that are given to us by the transversal companies and CITA, whether they would comply with the needs. And as SG rightfully indicated, for instance, will that type of equipment enable virtual courts? Would that type of equipment be sufficient to implement and maintain the rollout of the requirements of case lines and court online, which obviously needs a higher specification type of laptop or desktop than your normal run-of-the-mill laptop that you can buy from any major store. So there are also prescripts that we need to comply with when it comes to that procurement. SG, I don't know whether you want me to proceed with the CRT issue while I'm on the floor.
Yes. I think on the issue of the cybersecurity, whilst we are still on ICT, there was an issue of cybersecurity, and the member asked for details, not necessarily details with regards to the risk and why we are still having it in our risk register. I think my comment would be that it does not necessarily mean that we have done nothing since the breach in 2020. We have taken the committee in confidence and submitted a comprehensive report subject to our last meeting when it was raised on what we have done. We are not saying that the issue is not managed. What we are saying here is that we still have to keep it our eye on it, because I think even beyond ourselves as the OCJ, big companies are being attacked. They are being breached, banks and every big organization that has more resources than what we have. So it is a risk that we cannot escalate and remove from our side. So I just wanted to clarify that with regards to this still remaining a risk of vulnerability. In that context, you can deal with the court recording, but I wanted to deal with the, because you have covered the infrastructure. The issue of generators is a national problem with the courts, and I don't think it's only courts. All the state buildings are having the same issue, but it is a mandate that falls squarely in the DPW. We do engage with them. But the National Key Point Declaration is a legislation that is administered by the South African Police Service. And to the extent to which they will agree to have the National Key Point declared on the SCA, one will still have to see whether it will happen, because we have other aspects that we had raised. And there are many engagements that happened in the past, where even the Concord itself and the SCA and others will identify why they are not a national key point. But I just want to clarify that the declaration is a South African Police Service competency, which does not fall within us. And it has been raised before, even at the high level, between the Chief Justice meeting with the
I think with the Minister of Police in the past. I just wanted to place that, and that you can proceed with the other aspect that you wanted to raise.
Thank you. Thank you, SG. The one question on ICT that I haven't addressed yet was the previous reports of non-responsive bids for the infrastructure upgrades or infrastructure refresh. I can report that those procurement processes were concluded last year in the previous financial year, and the OCJ is awaiting delivery from the appointed service provider. And the reason why there's a slight delay in the delivery is because of the worldwide backlog in terms of manufacturing, and specifically in relation to the microchip shortage that is an essential piece of equipment that comes with every ICT infrastructure that, one procures nowadays. So yes, procurement has been concluded. Once the equipment starts arriving, we will then engage, commence with the process of implementing the, new infrastructure. On the issue of CRT machines and the court recording technology, I think the, committee members have been appraised by the Minister and the Department of Justice in terms of the procurement processes, which have not yet been concluded, of which the OCJ is a partner in terms of a participant of the services. So, the procurement process lies within the Department of Justice. We did have an opportunity to make one input to the procurement process, and that was to ensure that the list of all our courts are, captured within that procurement process, so they don't leave out one of our sites. So, that was our input into that procurement process. But what we have done as the OCJ in the meantime, the SG has allowed us to enter into a short-term contract through a procurement process internally in the OCJ, where we have requested submissions from various service providers to do maintenance and repairs of the CRT machines for a period of 6 months in anticipation that the CRT contract would be concluded by the Department of Justice. And this short-term contract is now exclusively for interim repairs and maintenance of CRT machines in the superior courts to ensure continuation of services. What the court administration unit has also done is when the contract came to an end previously last year, 2021, they realized that there might be a problem and a shortage. The OCJ then also procured a few mobile CRT machines that are then couriered to wherever there is a major problem in this regard, to ensure that where there is a court that doesn't have a machine that's operational and functioning, that we have a backup. Obviously, we do not have enough of those resources, but that is also a measure that has been in, been deployed by the court administration unit. So hopefully, once the contract with Justice is concluded, then we will revert to the contract with the Department of Justice, and then we will also have to make use of their service provider for future repairs and maintenance and procurement. On the issue of the telephones that were raised by, I think, Honorable Swart, telephones in the SCA, the issue with the telephones are linked with the issue that the SCA raised by Peter Hines. Because we are utilizing unified communication systems, the moment the SITA lines go down, then your telecommunication lines also are being affected, because the unified communication system, which runs the PABX of the court, is on the Vodacom network. So the moment SITA goes down, where we run other services on, everything moves over to Vodacom, and then the Vodacom network gets overloaded, and that has an impact on the telephone system for that short period. So it will be an intermittent issue until SITA has then recovered the lines, and we can then revert back to Vodacom for, telephones and internet, and then the SITA lines then take up the other responsibilities of your transversal systems like BAS and PARSAL. So it's a overloading issue. It's not an issue that is persistent or something that needs a replacement of any systems. Thank you. SG, I'm done with.
Okay. Yes, honourable members, I do confirm that I am a member of the IJS board, as well as our representation at the IJS, and further confirm that our online project is funded through the IJS. So I will hand over to Mr. Nube to deal with the questions relating to the court online, and he can also touch on the our role at the IJS level besides the implementation and the plans going forward. Mr. Nube.
Thank you, SG, and good morning to the members and the chair. The SG has already indicated that she is a member of the board of DG board of directors for the IJS. There's also the implementation committee, which supports the board, and the OCJ is represented in that particular committee. With specific reference to the court online project, there is also a steering committee chaired by the OCJ. There are representatives from different stakeholders, one being IJS, as people who are funding the project. We have monthly meetings that they have been attending since the inception of the project. Also, we have CETA represented in that particular committee, and they attend the meetings quite frequently. So all the challenges that we have been facing in the court online project in terms of the delays, all of us have been affected by it, but all of us as a team and a committee, we have been dealing with them. So at this point in time, I must indicate that a lot of progress has been made, and we should be thanking IJS for always ensuring that the funds are available. And they have also indicated to us that we've been able to spend all funds that have been allocated to the project on time, and nothing was ever returned. I think it is also important just to touch on this, Chairperson, because the question was raised regarding the equipment. When we are implementing the court online, one of the requirements was to ensure that there is necessary infrastructure in place. This also includes the equipment that is being bought. So when we decided on purchasing the laptops, just to add on what has been said already, part of the requirement was to ensure that the laptops that are being purchased going forward will be able to support the court online project. So everyone is being prepared for that. So all the courts, especially the SCA and the Concord, we've made sure that the infrastructure is ready for the court online, but also the equipment that the judges are using will also be aligned to that. If it's a desktop for the registrars, it should be all in one desktop. So I just thought I should mention that it is not just the thumb sucking, it is based on the requirements as per advised by the CETA and also by the implementing service provider. When it comes to the which courts are going to be next, the role that the OCJ plays is that of advising the committee that handles these issues, which is chaired by one of the heads of court. We've indicated to them, as I've said now, that the court that should be next after Gauteng should be court that will have all the infrastructure ready in terms of equipment, in terms of people being trained and so on. But of course, we appreciate it. We are alive to the fact that the most apex court, the apex court, and the most next inline court, which is the SCA, will have to be considered first. But of course, all other courts, in our view, are just as important. However, OCJ does not make that decision. We only present the state of readiness to the committee, and they then get their direction from the head of court meeting, which will then indicate which court should be next. But as we've indicated, we've tried to ensure that all the courts are ready, and if required, those details can be made available. But also, the committee that I've referred to, which is the steering committee, has also dealt with the issues that SG touched on, what happens when the court online is implemented in all courts, will be there post they become redundant. I must just indicate that right now, where we've implemented the court online, as you might be aware, in Gauteng already, with effect from 29 March, we are using some of the officials, the ushers, we've trained them. We are using them as people who are going to assist litigants who would be doing the walk-ins at the court so that they are assisting them to use the kiosk. But two, we already have call centers in Johannesburg and Pretoria, and the people who are handling that are people who we have identified as the ushers because they're the most experienced and understand the court processes. So just to add on what ST has said, to say this has been looked at. We have HR in our committees who are also ensuring that issues of change management and the organizational OD is being dealt with properly. I think, SG, I have dealt with all the issues relating to court online.
Court integrity.
I'm sorry, SG?
There was a question on court integrity of the court orders and what's in place to protect it from fraudulent practices.
Thank you, SG, for that. The issue of fraudulent court orders, I must indicate that there is a committee also that is chaired by a judge, a judge president at that, and we have been working with the judge to identify the measures that we can put in place to ensure that this phenomenon is prevented. But I think I must highlight that we have two scenarios. The first scenario is where the actual order itself is manufactured, for the lack of a better word, outside the court environment. So where a person in the street will create something that looks like a court order. What we have then done is to say, when members of the public, and we can go on our website, when members of the public encounter such and want to verify whether that is a genuine court order, they must approach a chief registrar. And the chief registrar, of course, we don't tell members of the public what we look for, but the chief registrar would then be able to identify certain features that we have put in place to make sure that they start. If you go back to prior this implementation, you'll see that all the high divisions of the High Court had different templates for their court orders. What happens now that if you go to any High Court, you will see that all the court orders are the same. Just from the face of it, they look the same. And of course, without mentioning in public what the features are, we have certain features that we have put there that only we know how to identify. So that's the first one that we are dealing with. But internally as well, we also have put measures in place to ensure that there is a process from the time, because what we found in very few incidents, what we find is that sometimes these people would approach one of our officials and what would have been a genuine court order, but the contents have been interfered with. So we have put a system in place to ensure that when the judge makes an order, from there on, there is a way of dealing with the information until such time that the judge signs the order. So that we've put in place as well. I don't know if it should be advisable to say it here, but we are happy to divulge what process there is. But of course, the last one would be that in the Gauteng where we have now started with the court online, it will help us a great deal dealing with these issues of fraudulent court orders. Maybe lastly, there was an issue, I know it's not my area, but there was an issue relating to the SC, how often do we meet with DPW? That has been dealt. I just thought I should mention that at the court level, also the directors meet with DPW, not just at national level. At the court level, just for the SCA, because the question was asked specifically, the last meeting that took place between the officials and the director of the SCA and DPW in that region was on the 22nd of March, 2022. So that is quite recent. And these meetings, obviously, they happen quite frequently. And all these issues that are being raised, either by judges or ourselves, are also raised with them. So we have records to show that these meetings do take place. Thank you, SG and Chairperson.
Thanks, Nati. And to add to what Mr. Ngube has already indicated, the JPs also preside over the PECs, which also include the DPW in the meetings on dealing with some of the issues and the challenges that impact court performance at court level. I will also touch on, before Mr. Malau deals with the issue of engagement with women department relating to other aspects, there was a question on slide 27 around the tools of, to unpack. What do we mean that the OCJ doesn't have adequate skill sets to operate in the new normal? What we are actually saying in this instance is that on one hand, the budget cuts that are being imposed across all the departments in government has an impact on also our capability to be able to source these tools of trade that we need. That only doesn't include only refer to the computers, laptops, etc. It includes also systems that facilitate work that are related to certain technical areas that you need to buy the software to do certain things. And I think the members would know that currently the leaf is automated, is being automated in other areas of government. Pay slips are being automated. There are many areas that are being automated. There are other tools that technical areas need to be able to do their work instead of doing it manually, doing it using the systems. I think that can apply in risk, that can apply in audit, et cetera. There are different softwares that are required. Those are tools of trade that assist the department or organizations to perform optimally. That is on the tools of trade side of issues. On the other side of this is automation at the court process level, especially. Not that it doesn't apply to other administrative side of things. The court online has one aspect that will require ICT automation skill, ICT skills, COVID-19 going virtual, as well as generally, as I've indicated, I think we are now operating in, I don't know whether it's still the fourth or the fifth industrial revolution. I don't want to expose myself. That's not my technical area. The Internet of Things. I mean, everything now is going very automated, to the automated side of things. So what we are saying here is that we cannot be oblivious to the fact that the world is moving there to the Internet of Things. And obviously, historically, our workforce was not geared for that. So it is a matter that we need to lift out as a risk to say that whilst we are trying our best to do all these things, the budget cuts are impacting on us and making it more and more difficult for us to have the resources to be able to be relevant in the world of technology as it stands today. That is in a nutshell my to that question. Thank you so much. Itu, you can cover the areas and then we can go back to the chair so that we can take it forward.
Okay. Thank you, SG. Honorable Chair, there was a question from Honorable Neville Graham relating to the purpose of the consultation with the Department of Women and the outcome thereof. Chairperson, in relation to the revised framework for strategic planning and annual performance, it requires that when developing our plans, departments should consult with the Department of Women, which is a leading department, on priorities relating to women, youth, and people with disabilities. The main purpose, basically, of this consultation is to ensure that priorities relating to women, youth, and people with disabilities are taken into consideration and forms part of the departmental pledge. The outcome of this consultation, Chairperson, led to the inclusion of the three outputs that I've already alluded to, the first one being the one on youth empowerment, and the second one being on representation of women at SMS, as well as the one on representation of people with disabilities. So all these outputs have been covered on our APP, and this came as a result of you know, the revised framework, as well as our consultation with you know, the Department of Women. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we have covered from our side all the questions that we asked. Back to you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Maybe just from my side, before we wrap up, one just to on a very quick and easy question to connect with Honorable Horn on the register, on the risk register. A simple question to ask SG: is your risk register functional? Is it functional? Or are you having this well put together risk register, because it's a work of consultants, this something in the shelves to impress us about? And I'm asking if it is functional in the sense that, is it working? That's a question that one is asking. And to answer that, one would need to understand whether that unit that's responsible for the functioning of this monitoring, acting on it, is itself because all you have to do, you have to identify what this risk is or outcome, and is how you're going to mitigate it. But we've kind of grown beyond that to want to know if it's working. And I want you to answer that to the best of your ability, because you're going to be with us. We're going to monitor this. We're going to check it when you come in front of us about whether it is functional. That's the first quick follow-up I want to raise. The second one, SG, I seem to have missed it in your annual performance plan. You can point me towards where it is. We visited the Mthatha Court, High Court. One of the few things that we're impressed about was their library, this judicial library, in support of the judges. There are quite a number of questions that came out of that, and I'm going to use Mthatha so that it covers all the other courts. I have not seen in your indicators, in your issues of objectives, as to how you support these judicial libraries that are there, and how capacitated are they? And for Mthatha, I'll give an example. You have a good librarian there who has no assistant librarian, that when she's ill, as it happened, for 2 days away, the judges are stuck. They can't get assistant. You don't have an assistant librarian. You don't have a principal librarian. And it's quite an important service I missed it. I couldn't pick it up in your indicators. And link that with your judicial education. One of the things they've raised was the lack of training, lack of continuous training of these librarians, not even workshops that they go to refresh themselves and capacitate themselves more. And then there was the issue of the, what you call these heritage books, that there's basically no budget for it, your law reform books. And I mean, you could see it there in that library. You've got a lot of material there, which is important for the work that the judges do. And they don't seem to be getting this kind of proper assistance. You know, these heritage books that you have that you can't even cover them because they have got to remain as they are, as part of this jurisprudence and a home kind of ground thing. So I'm just interested as to, are you able to point to me how that support from your APP is done so that we can follow that? And the last point had to do with this disposal of old kind of items that you have got in their space. They're not able to have a new space because there is no service that does this to empty what they no longer kind of need. And yet in some high court, it does happen. Thank you, SG. Your response?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members. I will deal with the risk. Firstly, to assure the committee that we do have a risk unit at a senior management level, which is responsible for risk. And whether our risk is functional, the risk features at three levels of our governance. We deal with this aspect at operational level, we deal with it at EXCO level, we deal with it at under the oversight of the Audit and Risk Committee. So the Audit and Risk Committee is very rigorous with us when it comes to this risk for the institution. So that is where we are really taken for task. And I can assure you, we don't have consultants doing risk. Like every other aspect of our work, we do homegrown internally. So we don't cut and paste from any Google or any documents and say this is our risk. I can assure you that, Chair, we really get engaged with the risks. And every unit with the risk manager sits and really go through a proper workshop engagement on the risks that are affecting or other emanating from each area. And even in the course, we have risk champions, which the risk manager nationally here work with to make sure that risk is internalized and institutionalized as part of our business. So the answer is yes, it's functional. Yes, it's monitored even at audit and risk level, as well as the role that the risk manager play in that role. So that is how far I can assure you, Chairperson, that it's fully capacitated and all that. Except to say that our risk manager resigned, so we are filling the post. I think the post will be filled very soon. There's already been advertised. As soon as the manager left the end of January, we advertised that our one is coming. So there's nothing that has fallen into the cracks, and the work is being done. And I can assure you, for instance, we have 100% e-disclosure of the SMS is at the end of April, to just as an example to show that our risk function is really functional. The issue of the Mthatha, the library, and that you have not seen it in our indicators. Some of the issues I will leave to the head of court administration. I think the DDG and the chief director there will deal with this aspect of the librarians and their support and why they don't appear in the APP. We also have an operational plan, which deals with some of the aspects that might not necessarily appear on the APP, as well as other areas that the director's court operation will be held accountable for. And I will leave that to and ask the court administration to deal with that. Mr. Nube will deal with that with Advocate Botheder on that, as well as dealing with the disposal of old court documents, which is obviously a very problematic issue for all the courts because the National Archives are full. Putting documents online requires huge amounts of money, which we don't have. On the other side, budgets are being cut. It's really being between a hard rock and a hard place. But we do try to make sure that we find
ways within our meager budget to find ways that we can be able to manage that. But that, I must concede, is a problem with regard to court documents because of the bulk of the documents that we have. And we think that maybe beyond and after the court online, this problem will begin to recede, although the historical legacy of the documents will still have to be attended to. I know that the Justice Department has had that project. Court administration will talk more on that and deal with that. On the support to the librarians, yeah, I think I've already mentioned that, the court administration. Nati and Marlies can deal with that.
Thanks, SG. On the library issue, the SG has already indicated that we actually have that as one of our KPIs on our operational plan. But I think it's important as well to mention that we have committees that we have set up for librarians, which is chaired by one of the directors here. So whatever information in terms of support that librarians need, they can get it from the director who's responsible at national level, but also that forum was created so that there can be a sharing of information with particular reference to assist them to access the Constitutional Court library, which is one of the biggest. So they have that particular support directly, and as I've said, through the committee and through the chairperson. But the issue of the of course purchasing of books is still an issue that is with the Department of Justice. We are able to buy some books, but in the main, the Department of Justice is responsible for that, and they have contracts in place to do that. In view of where we are in terms of technology, a decision was then taken to say, instead of buying all the books that would need physical updating, most of it is then done online, and that resource is always available even at as far as Mthatha. Now, of course, there is an element of human resource. Chairperson, you would know that we are struggling with the issues of capacity almost all departments. We have a librarian, and it's quite a good librarian at Mthatha. It might be that he believes that he needs maybe an assistant. However, at this point in time, when we prioritize, we'll prioritize a librarian, and we will then make arrangements within to have somebody who would then be an assistant as and when required. It happens in most of the positions with us, unfortunately. We can only have one court manager. If the court manager is not there, we definitely have to find somebody who must act or assist. We only have one chief registrar. If she's not or is not there, we have to find somebody that must assist. And that goes with every other position, including that of a librarian. So that's the approach, but they always have support that is available to them as and when it is required. Now, when it comes to the issue of disposal of assets in general, but whether it's books or some of the old court files, we are dealing with two issues. The first one is that we do have disposable committees as it is required in terms of the pay scripts at every provincial level. That committee will then sit and identify what needs to be disposed of and then follow the prescribed process and report to national office. That's one part. So when there are issues of old books that have been identified and must be disposed of, then they get disposed. I'm particularly was present at least before the COVID hit in Eastern Cape when they were dealing with that particular issue, and we dealt with it to what was expected, at least in my view. So that's the first part. But the issue of space is as a result of the court files where we are running out of space. And that is because the High Court, Superior Court files cannot be, unfortunately, be destroyed. And this is where why we've then at OCJ come up with one, as you said, the court online will assist going forward, but it can't deal with obviously the legacy problem. And as a result, we have made a submission to IJS, which has not been approved at this point, to assist us with digitization of old records. Once all the old records, which run into millions, really have been digitized, we should then be able to make space for the old ones. But I can just inform you that it's a concern that we all share at all levels, particularly with the big divisions. It's a serious problem, but it's a problem that we are trying to find solutions for. And the main solution is to have those records digitized so that if we are able to dispose of them, then we can, but we can't dispose when they have not been digitized. I hope I've covered everything, SG.
I think you covered. No, something about the training of librarians.
Yes.
I don't know if you touched on that, did you?
Yes, there is such a training. What we have done at OCJ, perhaps, which is not something that is done across the board, each position, for instance, as I've said, the librarians, we've created a forum where all these librarians are able to meet quarterly, and they also interact throughout. So there's information sharing that happens, but also there's an exposure that the director who chairs this forum has ensured that it happens, which is access to the constitutional court, where they are able to access, but also they are able to receive some kind of assistance whenever there is. Remember that they have, I'll call them workshop. I don't know if it's correct to say it's a training, but they have workshops quarterly where issues are being trained and information is being shared. So that's how we deal with it, which is this particular forum. And of course, we are happy to share that information if there is a need. Thank you, sir.
Okay. SG?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. From our side, I think we tried to cover everything.
That's fine. Just before I wrap up the last point, you
yes.
Don't need to answer it now, but there was the Deputy Judge President of the court has raised something very interesting that I also don't see in the APP, that of producing these judgments, this law, and then we end up going to buy them back from Jutas and Van Wyk. That I think there's a gap. There's supposed to be a project that we do so that we ourselves as creators of this are able to produce this, and it could be what you call self-sustainability kind of a project. So there's nothing like that you do.
I'm not sure whether I should answer that now or leave it for later. You said I shouldn't.
I can
exercise that option. But just to say, and Nati can come in, because the judges have raised exactly the same thing at their forum as the head of court. And obviously there are more dynamics involved than simply us having the capacity to take a judgment of every court that is reportable and translating it and into what is a reportable case for public consumption and academic use, etc. So there are a lot of dynamics involved. So we are alive to that. The judges are really unhappy about that. The entire judgeship is very unhappy about that. That costs a lot of money to buy from Judastat, Lexis, etc. And yeah, those contracts are run through Justice Department, as you would know. But we have internally looked at that matter. Maybe Nati, do you want to give some highlights on the project? It's a project of the judiciary, so maybe at the right time, let's share it later on. Yeah, let's leave it at that.
We can give highlights, but that's a project that we're going to be interested in. We can come back to it but Nati can say whatever he wants to say in a minute. But it's an important project.
Okay. Yes. We noted,
Oh, sorry, Elsie.
Proceed, Nati.
Oh, yes. I just wanted to say that firstly, if you look at our APP chair, you would see there is something there which is called monitoring reports on law reporting project.
Yes.
So that is what you are talking about. I have to indicate that it's as SG has said, it's something that the former Chief Justice was very particular about, and the heads of court, of course, wanted this particular issue to be addressed. There has been, it's a very long exercise. We were tasked as OCJ to engage with different jurisdictions to see if there are things we can learn from them, but we have started the project. So what the only highlight perhaps that I'm, if I may be at liberty to share, was that for a starter, we wanted to have a portal where all judgments will be deposited, which will serve as a repository, so that judges are able to access them irrespective of where the judgment was. And from there, we can then embark on making sure that we get to a point where they produce their own law reports, if one wants to call it that. But it's going to require a lot of money. It requires a lot of systems to be put in place. And it's really going to be a phased-in approach. But this is where we are now, and we are working on that. Hence, you see that particular KPI in that report. That's all I can share, SG, at this point, and Chair.
Okay. No, thank you, SG. We will basically travel that journey with you. You know that it's been raised, and so if it was a project that you are doing at your own leisure, we want that project to become real, given its importance and so on. So unless any member wants to raise anything else, I see Honorable Swart, that's your old hand. I think that's a legacy hand. If none, therefore, want to thank you, SG, and your team. Your final comment before we wrap up?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson and Honorable Members, for engaging with us. We've noted the areas of your concern, and to the extent that it is under our control, we'll ensure that we manage those, and those dependencies, of course, will be managed as we try to move forward. And thanks for your support and for your guidance. Thank you so much on behalf of the team.
Thank you, SG and the OCJ team. Thank you very much, honorable members, for your interrogation, as always, being on top of your game on these issues. We had promised Honorable Swart that we'll be done before you leave. So That's the end of it, Honorable Swart, and I think you've not missed anything. In that way, I want to thank you and then say the meeting at this point is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.